6 a.m., La Voz Latina will be with us. In fact, I have to rack that up, and I will in just a moment. I had another story, but I'll put that away. It's too long. And I wanted to play some Kimya Dawson, but it has frank language in it, and I think we're leaving the safe harbor where we can play frank language. So I'll do that next time. Oh, yes, you know, one thing that makes me so sad is that as the years go by, we have less and less freedoms, less and less opportunities to communicate. I think we should do something about that. You think? Anyway. So let's see, I'll put that in there. How about some Paul Robeson? I do love that. Let's see, this is... I played Ode to Joy earlier. And let's see what we have. Jerusalem, Ode to Joy, Minstrel Boy. And Pete Bogg, Soldiers. We'll see what we can do. I'll shut up and just play it in the music. Again, you're tuned to WBAI in New York in our 52nd year? Yeah, I guess it is. Is it? No. It's 2011. This is our 51st year. Right, I should have that right. 51 years of surviving by your support. Please stay tuned.
And did those feet in ancient time walk upon England's mountains green? And was the holy Lamb of God on England's pleasant pasture seen? And did the countenance divine shine forth upon Jerusalem builded here among these dark satanic mills? Bring me my bowl. Bring me my arrows of desire. Bring me my spear, O clouds unfold. Bring me my chariot of fire. I will not cease from mental fight, nor shall my sword sleep in my hand. We have built Jerusalem in England's green and pleasant land.
The setting of the melody from the choral section of Beethoven's Ninth Symphony to the words by Schiller, "All men are brothers, alle Menschen werden Brüder."
Praise to Joy, the God descended, daughter of Elysium, ray of mirth and rapture blended, goddess, to thy shrine we come. By thy magic is united what stern custom parted white. All mankind are brothers plighted, where thy gentle wings abide. Freude, schöne Götterfunken, Tochter aus Elysium, wir betreten feuertrunken, himmlische dein Heiligtum. Deine Zauber binden wieder, was die Mode streng geteilt. Alle Menschen werden Brüder, wo dein sanfter Flügel weilt. Peace before us, build it wide and deep and long. Speed the slow and check the eager, help the weak and curb the strong. None shall push aside another, none shall let another fall. March beside me, oh my brothers, all for one and one.
And you are tuned to WBAI in New York. This program has been Saturday Morning with the Radio On. Thank you for being there, those of you who were there. I really appreciate it, and thank you for supporting WBAI financially. Someone called in and did just that. Thank you. I personally thank you. Our next scheduled program in 10 seconds, if I've got this right, will be La Voz Latina. Let's see. Hold on. Let me just move it like that. Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Buenos días a todos los amables oyentes en esta mañana de su radio Intiday. Allí ya chupa allí ya chupa allí ya chupa allí ya casi quichis. Que hay cosas con la tapica ya está tan agua ya está cura pero ya rima ni cura o ni cura para ni cura. Cura que alguien está que juega cura chaymo que hay Puerto Rico nación manta pacha. Pay cura su tigmi calle 13 y las patas vemos o taquita pomanchis. Chay está que su tigmi Latinoamérica. Uy ahí cosuchis.
Cancunapa. Soy lo que dejaron, soy toda la sobra de lo que se robaron. Un pueblo escondido en la cima, mi piel es de cuero, por eso aguanta cualquier clima. Soy una fábrica de humo, mano de obra campesina para tu consumo. Frente de frío en el medio del verano, el amor en los tiempos del cólera, mi hermano. Soy el que nace y el día que muere, con los mejores atardeceres. Soy el desarrollo en carne viva, un discurso político sin saliva. Las caras más bonitas que he conocido, soy la fotografía de un desaparecido, la sangre dentro de tus venas. Soy un pedazo de tierra que vale la pena, una canasta con frijoles. Soy Maradona contra Inglaterra, anotándote dos goles. Soy lo que sostiene mi bandera, la espina dorsal del planeta en mis cordilleras. Soy lo que me enseñó mi padre, el que no quiere a su patria, no quiere a su madre. Soy América Latina, un pueblo sin pierna, pero que camina. Oye,
tú no puedes comprar al viento, tú no puedes comprar al sol, tú no puedes comprar la lluvia, tú no puedes comprar el calor, tú no puedes comprar las nubes, tú no puedes comprar los colores, tú no puedes comprar mi alegría, tú no puedes comprar mis dolores, tú no puedes comprar al viento, tú no puedes comprar al sol, tú no puedes comprar la lluvia, tú no puedes comprar el calor, tú no
Tengo mis dientes pa' cuando me sonrío, la nieve que maquilla mis montañas. Tengo el sol que me seca y la lluvia que me baña. Un desierto embriagado con peyote, un trago de pulque para cantar con los coyotes. Todo lo que necesito, tengo a mis pulmones respirando azul clarito, la altura que sofoca. Soy las muelas de mi boca, mascando coca. El otoño con sus hojas desmayadas, los versos escritos bajo la noche estrellada. Una viña repleta de uva, un cañaveral bajo el sol en Cuba. Soy el mar Caribe que vigila las casitas, haciendo rituales y agua bendita. El viento que peina mi cabello, soy todos los santos que cuelgan de mi cuello. El jugo de mi lucha no es artificial, porque el abono de mi tierra es natural.
Tú no puedes comprar el viento, tú no puedes comprar el sol, tú no puedes comprar la lluvia, tú no puedes comprar el calor.
Escuchando esa hermosa melodía, Calle 13, Latinoamérica, se llama esta melodía, una pieza de este grupo puertorriqueño, bien interesante. Allí escuchábamos también que le acompañaban Totó La Momposina, una extraordinaria cantante de música afrocolombiana, así como Susana Vaca, también cantante de música afroperuana, ahora ministra de Cultura, y María Rita de Brasil. Están ustedes en su programa La Voz Latina. Hoy 8 de octubre, le acompañamos acá bien temprano. Y es que esta es una semana, ha sido muy intensa esta semana, Daniel. Ha sido una semana muy, muy movida. Y parece que los próximos días van a ser así igualmente movidos, ¿no? Porque la gente está en la calle.
William, es increíble, ¿verdad? Como esta ciudad que ha estado dormida, especialmente luego de los sucesos del 11 de septiembre del 2001, se nota luego de las últimas 3 semanas y en particular luego de que la policía de la ciudad de Nueva York injustamente y abusivamente arrestara a 700 personas el sábado pasado en el Brooklyn Bridge, en una especie de entrampada que le hicieron a los que estaban marchando por el puente, dirigidos al frente iba la policía, y luego que tienen a la gente sobre el puente, en el medio del puente, los rodean y les arrestan. Y eso indignó, William, tanto a la ciudadanía de esta, a los residentes de esta ciudad, que la gente se ha tirado a la calle en diferentes actividades, y hablaremos en más detalles de lo que está sucediendo, en particular con las protestas alrededor de Wall Street, precisamente donde está situada esta emisora WBAI. Pero antes de entrar... Sí,
estamos estratégicamente ubicados aquí.
Estamos estratégicamente ubicados. Así que cuando se tome a Wall Street, a lo mejor el primer campanazo vendrá de aquí, esperamos. Sí. William, pero antes de entrar de lleno en los detalles de lo que ha sucedido en el activismo, sí tenemos que, me parece que recordarles al público, bueno, primero darle buenos días, un saludo a todo el mundo y en particular a una compañera de nombre Gladys, que se puso en comunicación con nosotros luego de que escuchó el último programa y las invitaciones que hicimos al activismo. Así que un saludo a todo el mundo. Pero esta semana estamos recaudando dinero de nuevo, como hemos hecho por más de 6 años, casi 7 años en el programa La Voz Latina para la emisora WBAI. Esta emisora, como sabe el público, es una emisora que no anuncia productos para nada, ni de vestir, ni de consumir, ni nada. Esta emisora depende solo y exclusivamente de las aportaciones que hace el público para sostener a la misma. Y la manera que se hace eso es haciéndose miembro de la emisora, haciéndose afiliado a WBAI. Y en este caso, pues estamos haciendo una oferta, ¿verdad?, para que el público se anime y se haga miembro de la emisora. Y es un premium o un regalo que se le daría de un DVD, un video en DVD que se llama Cuba, Caminos de la Revolución. Y William, esto trata sobre los 4 años, primeros años, ¿verdad?, de la Revolución Cubana.
Exactamente, es un video sobre los primeros 4 años de la Revolución Cubana. Un video que pues muestra un poco todo este proceso de expropiación en que entra Cuba cuando entra ese conflicto entre Estados Unidos y Cuba, ¿no? Es un video además que es un documental que nos ayuda a entender mucho lo que realmente es Cuba y lo que ha venido pasando allí, ¿no?, en los últimos años. Entonces, sí, recomendamos a todo el mundo que lo vean. Además, es del Instituto Cubano de... ¿Cómo se llama?
Sí, tengo aquí, se llama, bueno, Video Icaic, y viene de Amazonía Films. Amazonía Films. No es un producto producido en los Estados Unidos, viene directamente del corazón de Cuba. Y William, es interesante porque muchas veces pensamos que todo el público que nos escucha es un público que apoya la Revolución Cubana o el proceso actual dirigido por Chávez de la Revolución del siglo XXI, del socialismo del siglo XXI en Venezuela. Y no siempre es así, es interesante porque hemos conocido a través de los años muchas personas que escuchan el programa no porque apoyan a estos movimientos sociales, sino porque quieren saber qué es lo que está sucediendo en esos países y quieren saber también qué está sucediendo aquí en Nueva York y quieren luchar por sus derechos aunque no apoyan necesariamente esos procesos. Y sí, ellos también, obviamente, muchas veces han aportado dinero al programa WBAI y continuamos exhortando al público a que apoye a esta emisora. Porque esta emisora, independientemente de la visión que uno tenga sobre diferentes asuntos políticos en América Latina, esta emisora es una voz que no está vendida, no tiene una conciencia comprada por los grandes empresarios que se creen que tienen derecho a literalmente a nuestro sudor, a nuestra vida, a nuestra sangre. Y se pueden hacer miembros de nuevo de WBAI. Por $100 recibirán este DVD si marcan al 212-209-2950. Y dicen que por los $100 quieren recibir la película Cuba, Caminos de Revolución. Sí, como tantas personas en la ciudad de Nueva York no pueden hacer eso, también se pueden hacer miembros de WBAI sencillamente con una aportación de $25. $25 por un año, o sea, les cubre hasta el año que viene, de nuevo octubre, y son miembros de la emisora. Y con eso quiere decir que usted, uniéndose a la familia, la gran familia de WBAI, tiene el derecho a votar por la junta que representa a esta emisora ante la otra Junta Mayor de Pacífica. O sea, usted literalmente se convierte en una persona por $25, y es lo único que puede aportar, miembro de este programa, de esta emisora, y puede participar en las decisiones. Recibirá por correo un boleto y podrá participar en las próximas elecciones. Por otro lado, si exhortamos, si no tiene la cantidad de los $100 completas, puede aportar $50 ahora y $50 el mes que viene, o $25 cada 3 semanas, o como pueda, hasta llegar hasta los $100, pero por $100, y le exhortamos, porque ahorita estamos jugando aquí, William está jugando con la computadora, dándole órdenes sobre qué tiene que hacer para ver si podemos poner en el aire segmentos del DVD, por lo menos del sonido, ¿verdad?, de Cuba, Caminos de Revolución. Y yo creo que cuando uno escuche lo que el contenido, es algo convincente que el público verá que, de hecho, como ya la mayoría del público que nos estás escuchando, William, nacieron luego de esos primeros 10 años de la Revolución Cubana, luego de 1970. Así que esto es una pieza de historia que francamente no la van a conseguir por la calle por ahí, y difícilmente alguien se la vaya a regalar. Así que la única manera de conseguirla por lo pronto es a través de esta emisora WBAI, y se llama Cuba Caminos de Revolución. Es los 4 primeros años de la Revolución Cubana. Se llama los 4 años que estremecieron al mundo.
Sí, bien, queremos pues invitarlos a todos a que contribuyan con esta su estación. Bien, vamos a escuchar un momento Hasta Siempre, Comandante, y ya volvemos con la película.
Aprendimos a quererte desde la histórica altura, donde el sol de tu bravura le puso cerco a la muerte.
Aquí se quedará clara la entrañable transparencia de tu querida presencia, comandante Che Guevara.
Vienes quemando la brisa con soles de primavera, para plantar la bandera con la luz de tu sonrisa.
Aquí se quedará clara la entrañable transparencia de tu querida presencia, comandante Che Guevara.
Gloriosa y fuerte sobre la historia dispara, cuando todo Santa Clara se despierta para verte.
Aquí se quedará clara la entrañable transparencia de tu querida presencia, comandante Che Guevara.
Como junto a ti seguimos y con Cuba te decimos hasta siempre, comandante.
Aquí se quedará clara la entrañable transparencia de tu querida presencia, comandante.
Y ahí estábamos escuchando Comandante, una pieza interpretada por el Buenavista Social Club, Hasta Siempre Comandante. Están ustedes en la 99.5 FM, este es su programa La Voz Latina. Estamos acá desde Wall Street transmitiendo Daniel Vile, quien les habla, William Camacaro. Estamos en este momento, bueno, vamos a colocar en cualquier momento, vamos a colocar el video que le habíamos dicho, es un video extraordinario donde hay imágenes de la época de en que Cuba, los primeros 4 años de la Revolución Cubana. Vamos a estar compartiendo con ustedes todo esto. Y vamos a estar también pidiéndole a todos ustedes que contribuyan con este su programa La Voz Latina. Es uno de los pocos programas en español que llega a ustedes todos los sábados, en la mañana, tempranito. Llegamos a ustedes todos los sábados. Y esta es una actividad que realizamos con cierta frecuencia, cada cierto tiempo, para pedirle a todos nuestros oyentes su contribución y su apoyo a este su programa La Voz Latina.
William, sin duda la acción más dramática que ha sucedido en las últimas semanas y que ha ayudado a polarizar esta ciudad ha sido la acción que con mucho valor, mucha creatividad y mucha iniciativa llevaron a cabo un grupo de jóvenes, la mayoría de ellos anglos, grupo pequeño, relativamente de algunos 50, 80 personas, y convocaron hace 3 semanas, un sábado por la tarde, una marcha que se llamaba, denominaron Ocupar a Wall Street. No hubo tal ocupación de Wall Street porque, debido a que hicieron tanta publicidad, ¿verdad?, ya había cientos y cientos de policías en las calles de Wall Street ese sábado. Pero sí lograron llegar a un acuerdo con las autoridades y la misma noche las autoridades le permitieron ocupar o pernoctar en el Parque Zuccotti, que queda apenas 3 cuadras de Wall Street, y a la derecha queda a 3 cuadras de la alcaldía, y está situado irónicamente frente al espacio, el terreno donde estaban ubicados las Torres Gemelas y todo el complejo que desapareció en ese día del 11 de septiembre. Entonces, esta juventud con esa iniciativa han logrado capturar la imaginación de la ciudad, William. Y es interesante, ya en esta ciudad la gente se ha polarizado. No había aquí, no es como en otros países, ¿verdad? En Puerto Rico, por ejemplo, te polarizas con el asunto del estatus y eso politiza al público. En México puede ser un asunto que politiza a la gente. Ahora mismo en Ecuador puede ser el debate sobre socialismo o no socialismo. En Venezuela, o Chávez o no Chávez. Aquí, ahora, en este momento, esta ciudad que estaba tan dormida y francamente para tantos de nosotros uno sentía como que se estaba enajenada, que la gente solamente quería saber de hacer dinero, etcétera, y eso es lo que se veía en la superficie, pero adentro, más profundo, la gente estaba sufriendo y está sufriendo por los golpes económicos que hemos sufrido gradualmente y paulatinamente durante los últimos años. Y cuando estos jóvenes toman esa iniciativa, lo que han hecho es entonces unir a todas las fuerzas en la ciudad que se oponen a los abusos de los grandes sectores económicos, de las personas que dominan a esta ciudad, de las personas que determinan la política para los Estados Unidos. Y sobre todo sabemos que no solamente en esta ciudad, sino a nivel de los Estados Unidos, el centro intelectual, el cerebro, el centro económico de todas las desgracias que le suceden a la gente pobre y trabajadora, está situado en Wall Street. Tuvieron una idea brillante en tomar la iniciativa de enfocar su campaña específicamente sobre Wall Street, a diferencia de muchas otras campañas que se han lanzado, ¿verdad?, que ha sido sobre la guerra, que ha sido sobre derechos de inmigrantes, que ha sido para aumentar el salario mínimo, que ha sido para un poquito más democracia, para lo que sea. En este caso, ellos dieron un golpe al precisamente lograr que la gente enfocara sus energías, sus rabias, sus demandas, sus exigencias en contra de Wall Street. Entonces ahí, por ahí es que surge entonces esa polarización, William, que ahora de momento en esta ciudad o tú estás a favor de estos manifestantes que francamente su demanda principal es en contra del capitalismo, o tú estás a favor de ello o en contra de ello. Y lo que hemos visto es que el 75% de la población dice que sí, Wall Street ya, los ricos ya han ido demasiado de lejos, tenemos que ponerle un control sobre esto y tenemos que hacer justicia económica.
Con el triunfo. Sí, mire, queremos, ahí tenemos parte de la película, queremos darle al audio de la película a todos ustedes para que sepan de qué documental estamos hablando. Entonces,
ni los rebeldes ni la isla tendrán reposo. Este es el monumento al Maine. Sin ser la intención de sus creadores, para los cubanos, el águila simboliza al imperialismo norteamericano en la isla. La primera águila la derribó el ciclón de 1926. La volvieron a colocar mucho más firme. En Estados Unidos nace la primera campaña contra la incipiente revolución. La prensa y varios congresistas atacan los tribunales revolucionarios creados para aplicar justicia a los asesinos y torturadores de la tiranía.
La detención fue a las 4 de la mañana. Traigo aquí porque lo conservaba, sé que me enfrentaría algún día delante de ti. ¿Te acuerdas que te lo dije? Esta es la bata. Verás que por aquí tiene sangre todavía. Porque me dio una patada en el vientre y tuve una hemorragia. Como me tuve que pasar con ellos para que no realizaran eso, me partieron dos vértebras. ¿Te acuerdas?
Y que tú le diste, cuando le dieron la primera pasada de palo, se cayó de rodillas. Y tú le metiste una patada por el hígado y cayó de bruces al suelo. ¿No recuerdas eso? Así que después que lo asesinaste, te lo profanaste también. Hombre, que tú eres un vil asesino.
Que te vi.
¿Delante de usted?
¡Te vi! Delante de mí lo mataste a tiro y después te reíste de cómo se moría.
Perdóneme.
En Avellaneda número 106, el 6 bueno, de octubre a las 7 de la noche.
Óigala, señora.
Y dime que no. Dime que no. Te sentaste a contarme cómo la habías matado. Dime que no. Dímelo, Calviño.
No puedo contestar.
Contra individuos como estos se dicta la pena capital. Ante los tribunales comparecen cientos de testigos y sobrevivientes de los miles de asesinatos y torturas que asolaron al país durante 7 años de dictadura batistiana. Solo son fusilados aquellos sicarios a los cuales se les prueba innumerables crímenes. Este es el teniente Enrique Despaine, autor de 53 asesinatos. Miles de soldados y miembros de la policía del régimen son puestos en libertad. Algunos, más involucrados en acciones del batistato, reciben condenas de prisión. Este personaje, disfrazado de rebelde, es Hermelindo Batista, hermano del dictador. Al igual que a muchos simpatizantes del régimen, se le deja en libertad. La justicia revolucionaria prevalece sobre la venganza. Medio millón de cubanos, espontáneamente, se reúnen para defender esta idea y a la naciente revolución. Mediados de enero del 59, a solo 2 semanas de la victoria rebelde, finaliza la Operación Verdad, que enfrenta la primera campaña manipuladora de los medios de difusión. Se expresa un nuevo tipo de relación entre gobernantes y gobernados, inédito hasta ahora. Las ancestrales estructuras represivas de una sociedad se demuelen. El viejo ejército, la policía, el conjunto de los aparatos coercitivos son desmantelados. No es solo la caída de un tirano o un simple cambio de gobierno. Fidel Castro firma como primer ministro del flamante gabinete del gobierno revolucionario. Manuel Urrutia es su presidente inicial. Se toman las primeras medidas de profunda repercusión social que abarcan la vivienda, la rebaja de los alquileres, los precios de las medicinas, la incautación de bienes malversados. Sin enfrentar el problema de la tierra, su pésima e injusta distribución, es imposible una transformación auténtica en la situación económica y social del país. La primera ley de reforma agraria es dictada en mayo de 1959. No es una ley extrema, permite la retención de hasta 30 caballerías a los propietarios. Una indemnización en términos justos.
William, esto es increíble. Uno, claro, se ha criado con esta revolución y he visto innumerables escenas, pero esta película francamente provocó que todos los pelos en mi cuerpo se levantaran. Me alegro que no tengo cabellos en la cabeza. A lo mejor se hubiesen parado también. Tienen que conseguir esta película. Tienen que conseguir esta película. Yo voy a aportar $100, William. Yo voy a aportar $100 para ayudar a la emisora y también conseguir este DVD. Es increíble. Las escenas aquí, William, enseñan al propio Fidel Castro manejando una grúa, derrumbando los edificios viejos de la dictadura batistiana.
Sí, el teléfono para que los compañeros...
El teléfono, como siempre, compañeros, es el 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Con una aportación de 212-209-2950. Y con una aportación, William, de $100, pueden adquirir el DVD titulado Cuba, Caminos de la Revolución, subtitulado Los Cuatro Años que Estremecieron al Mundo. Y es en blanco y negro, por supuesto, porque todo es de
vamos,
esa
vamos a escuchar un pedacito.
Vamos.
For good economical relations, we are now poor country, but in a rich, poor people, but in a rich country. What we want is to work in our rich country.
Escenas de Fidel Castro en Washington, D.C.
El claro rumbo popular y nacionalista del proceso cubano hace detonar contradicciones internas en sectores de la burguesía nacional. Se produce una crisis dentro del reciente gabinete del gobierno revolucionario. Fidel Castro renuncia a su cargo de primer ministro. El pueblo sale en multitud a apoyarlo. La crisis culmina con la salida del presidente Urrutia y algunos de sus seguidores dentro del gobierno. Osvaldo Dorticós asume la presidencia del país.
El silencio cubre la plaza. Un evento extraordinario, único en la historia de América, va a comenzar. Los campesinos lanzan sus sombreros al aire cuando el presidente de la República, doctor Osvaldo Dorticós, anuncia el regreso de Fidel Castro al cargo de primer ministro.
Lo único indispensable aquí, lo digo porque lo siento, es el pueblo. Si la revolución no tuviera el pueblo, estaría perdida. El pueblo es lo que importa y el pueblo lo tiene la revolución.
Fidel Castro regresa al gobierno y su imagen como líder se fortalece ante el pueblo.
De nuevo la patria tiene que distraer su tiempo. Alentada por periódicos nacionales y extranjeros, la voz de la contrarrevolución deja escuchar su alarido impotente en una grotesca conspiración donde se confabulan batistianos, latifundistas y trujillistas.
Es una farsa de invasión, pero marca el preludio de una creciente cadena de agresiones y conspiraciones, casi siempre alentadas y provenientes de territorio norteamericano. En octubre, Díaz Lanz, un traidor al ejército rebelde, bombardea La Habana. 47 víctimas es el saldo. Su avión, un bombardero B-25, partió desde Estados Unidos. En el último trimestre del 59, despunta la práctica terrorista de la quema de cañaverales. Las avionetas siempre vienen de rumbo norte. Los cubanos no tienen vocación militarista, ni tampoco la revolución.
Y William, si estamos escuchando escenas, y William y yo estamos privilegiados viendo escenas, y el público está escuchando partes del DVD Cuba, Caminos de Revolución, y esto es un resumen de los 4 años que estremecieron al mundo, en otras palabras, de los primeros 4 años de la Revolución Cubana, uh-huh. William, y estamos ofreciendo este DVD a cambio de una aportación del público de $100 para ayudar económicamente a esta emisora WBAI, que como ustedes saben no vive de anuncios, vive de las aportaciones del público. Y este DVD, William, es increíble. Yo he visto muchas escenas de la Revolución Cubana y jamás había visto lo que está ahí. Inclusive tenemos que advertir, algunas escenas son un poquito fuertes, pero es la realidad y el público debería de conocerlas.
Sí, así que llámenos al 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. Recuerden que este es uno de sus pocos programas en español acá en WBAI, y que además con su apoyo pues podemos de alguna manera pues justificar nuestra presencia aquí, justificar el idioma, el lenguaje español acá, y además luchar porque nos muevan hacia un horario mucho más amistoso, ¿no? Un horario en el cual todos ustedes estén despiertos y toda la audiencia esté completamente despierta, ¿no? Para que puedan escuchar, por ejemplo, este tipo de programa.
Sí, William, y de nuevo, si el público no, bueno, pueden pagar, si no pueden pagarlo de un solo una sola aportación, puede hacer un plan de pagos, pagarlo en dos o pagar $25 semanalmente o mensualmente. El punto es cubrir esa cuota de $100 por el DVD, y el DVD será obviamente enviado a la persona. Además, si no puede, pues puede aportar $25. Con $25 se hace automáticamente miembro de la gran familia de WBAI por un año. Y eso significa que usted puede participar en las elecciones de la junta que dirige a esta emisora. Y cualquier persona aportando sencillamente $25 por un año, eso es un regalo, pues entonces puede votar y hacerse miembro de la gran familia WBAI.
Exactamente. Llámenos al 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. 29.50.
Ya hoy precisamente en La Habana y en Oriente,
Camilo Cienfuego hablando.
Una milicia armada. Le vamos a poner el ejemplo nuestro cuando tuvimos que alzarnos y tuvimos que pelear. La totalidad de nuestros hombres no conocían el manejo de las armas de fuego. Y quizás en un momento sea necesario que una gran parte de esos ciudadanos tengan que tomar las armas. Porque muchos hombres no van a apartarse de la lucha armada si se presenta el momento, y nosotros consideramos que es útil que por lo menos sepan el manejo de esas armas. Nosotros no tenemos ningún temor de armar y de enseñar al pueblo el manejo de las armas, porque esta es una revolución, es un ejército identificado con el pueblo.
Así nacen en el mes de octubre del 59 las milicias nacionales revolucionarias. La isla entera se convierte en un polígono de prácticas. A finales de octubre, la avioneta que trae de regreso de Camagüey al legendario comandante Camilo Cienfuegos se pierde en el mar. Camilo había enfrentado un intento sedicioso encabezado por Huber Matos, entonces jefe del regimiento militar de esa provincia. La búsqueda del héroe dura semanas.
Su manera de ser, su carácter, su alegría, su franqueza, su disposición de todos los momentos a ofrecer su vida.
La voz del Che Guevara.
Los más grandes, con una naturalidad total, con una sencillez completa, sin el más mínimo alarde de valor, de sabiduría.
Un documento del Departamento de Estado norteamericano con fecha 1 de julio de 1959 rezaba: El gobierno de Castro no es del tipo que merezca salvarse. Se comenzó limitando la cuota azucarera que Cuba vendía a Estados Unidos hasta concebir un llamado programa de presiones económicas contra el régimen de Castro, emitido en marzo del 60 desde el mismo Consejo Nacional de Seguridad Norteamericano. La cuota azucarera sería suspendida poco después. Era el prólogo del bloqueo económico sobre la isla.
A bordo de un avión soviético en el cual viene a completar su viaje desde Moscú, llega al Aeropuerto Internacional José Martí de Rancho Boyeros, el vicepremier de la Unión de Repúblicas Socialistas Soviéticas, señor Anastas Mikoyan, que es recibido como huésped de honor del gobierno revolucionario de Cuba. Mikoyan es el hombre clave del gobierno soviético en materia de proyección comercial y económica en los mercados y naciones de todo el mundo.
El gobierno cubano se ve obligado a buscar nuevos espacios y mercados en ejercicio de su soberanía. Cuba vende azúcar a la Unión Soviética. Se inicia una relación de solidaridad que rebasa los marcos comerciales. El gobierno norteamericano da un nuevo paso, intentando provocar una crisis energética en el país. Ordena a sus refinerías no procesar el crudo enviado por el Estado cubano, en su mayor parte de procedencia soviética. La respuesta cubana conduce a las primeras intervenciones de las refinerías extranjeras. A cada medida de presión, el país acosado reacciona radicalizando su proceso. Es 1960, el año de la reforma agraria.
Aproximadamente a las 3 y 10 pasado meridiano del 4 de marzo de 1960, cuando era levantada la tercera lingada de los materiales explosivos que se extraían de la bodega de popa del barco francés La Cubre, un estallido seco, estremecedor, sembró la destrucción y la muerte en la nave. El vapor La Cubre había arribado a La Habana a las 9 y 14 ante meridiano procedente de Hamburgo, Amberes y Le Havre. Traía en sus bodegas 525 cajas de granadas, 938 cajas de municiones para fusil automático FAL, con un total de 76 toneladas de explosivos. Minutos más tarde, un segundo estallido, de mayor magnitud, asoló el muelle causando un número mayor de víctimas. Habían transcurrido 25 minutos.
Y de verdad que es duro recordar eso, porque algunos ya estaban muertos. Había un compañero que yo no recuerdo el nombre, era civil, tenía tanta metralla en el cuerpo que no se podía ver si uno le miraba cuando estaba en el hospital y no definía si era blanco o era negro. Había un compañero capitán al lado nuestro también que perdió una pierna.
101 muertos y más de 200 heridos son las víctimas del peor acto de terrorismo en la historia de Cuba, quizás solo superado por la extraña voladura del Maine. El sabotaje tiene dos objetivos: privar de armas al ejército rebelde y sembrar.
De nuevo, William, increíble, increíble. Las escenas en este DVD, la mayoría de ellas, 90%, no la he visto anteriormente. Estamos hablando del DVD Cuba, Caminos de la Revolución, subtitulado Los cuatro años que estremecieron al mundo. Y se trata, por supuesto, de los primeros cuatro años de la Revolución Cubana. Y este DVD lo pueden adquirir, compañeros y compañeras, por una aportación de $100 a su emisora WBAI, apoyando a este programa, William, La Voz Latina.
La Voz Latina.
Y llamando al 212-209-2950.
Yo quiero decirle que este video también tiene subtítulos en inglés y que ustedes pueden pues compartir este video con aquellos que no hablan el español. Y pueden, este sería un tremendo regalo también, un gran regalo para una persona que esté interesada en la historia, que esté interesada en qué es lo que ha ocurrido en Cuba en los últimos años, cómo Cuba se inicia este proceso revolucionario. Pues un gran regalo para que entiendan también cómo Estados Unidos poco a poco ha intentado estrangular a la isla caribeña y cómo la isla caribeña ha venido poco a poco también sobreviviendo cada uno de los ataques de las diferentes administraciones que han habido en los Estados Unidos.
Y es interesante, William, también porque es sumamente educativo y nos recuerda por qué es que surgió todo este conflicto entre los Estados Unidos y Cuba. Y francamente esto no tiene nada que ver con democracia o falta de democracia en Cuba, porque antes de Fidel Castro lo que había era una de las dictaduras más sangrientas conocidas en América Latina, la de Batista, y antes de él, Batista había derrocado a otro dictador llamado Machado. Y cuando Fidel, la revolución del movimiento 26 de julio, llega al poder y luego se unen fuerzas socialistas y comunistas, etcétera, tiene el respaldo popular 100%, prácticamente 100%, lo notamos. Pero interesante, William, siempre se decía para esa época que esta era una revolución de los comunistas soviéticos, que si no fuese por los rusos que estaban ahí dando el apoyo a Cuba, se cae mañana la revolución cubana, desaparece, el pueblo se va a levantar y va a derrocar al régimen dictatorial de Fidel. Nada ha pasado, todo lo contrario. Cualquiera que ha ido a Cuba conoce muy bien que
y desapareció la gran potencia y ahí está Cuba.
En el 91 desapareció, o sea, llevamos ya 20 años desafortunadamente de la desaparición de la Unión Soviética y la revolución cubana sigue más fuerte que nunca. Y la economía ahora con el desarrollo de países progresistas de América Latina como el de Chávez, como el de Daniel Ortega, muchos otros en América Latina, se ha fortalecido y ya los Estados Unidos ven que es difícil que vayan a derrocar esa revolución y lo que tratan de hacer es subvertirla invirtiendo capital, pero sabemos que el pueblo cubano ya pasó por el capitalismo, no quiere regresar a
eso. Así que llámenos si desean este video, este documental, que es un extraordinario documental, llámenos al 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950 y pidan su documental y colaboren con este su programa La Voz Latina o háganse miembro de esta estación por $25.
Y quisiéramos dar otro número por si acaso hay algún problema, porque vamos a ser francos, en el pasado reconocemos que hay personas que tuvieron algún tipo de dificultad adquiriendo el producto, quizás por falta de comunicación, el lenguaje o lo que sea, o el problema que sea, puede también llamar al 718, este es un teléfono, un celular personal, si tiene dificultad en lograr su debe de luego de la aportación, puede llamar al 718-414-9558, 718-414-9558, y hablamos Spanish, y ahí se le ayudará cualquier problema que tenga en adquirir el DVD. Pero por lo pronto, el número que tiene que llamar hoy, por favor, es el 212-209-2950. Y compañeros y compañeras, si no pueden aportar $100 todo de un momento, pueden aportar 50 una semana y 50 a las dos semanas o como sea. En última instancia, se pueden hacer miembros de la gran familia de WBAI y tener el derecho a votar por la junta que domina a esta, controla esta emisora, por $25 por un año.
Irá mencionando a todas las compañías norteamericanas que serán nacionalizadas.
1. Compañía Cubana de Electricidad. 2. Compañía Cubana de Teléfonos. Sinclair Cuba Lloyd Company S.A. 24. United Fruit Company.
Todos corean el popular Se llamaba, frase atribuida a un general Mambí. El gobierno cubano plantea una indemnización en términos razonables que Estados Unidos no acepta.
Ah, la, 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 la.
El pueblo protagoniza el único funeral alegre de su historia, el entierro de las compañías norteamericanas. Un carnaval revolucionario que concluye en el malecón habanero con los ataúdes lanzados al mar con rumbo norte.
Al mes siguiente, Fidel Castro regresa a Estados Unidos para participar en la Asamblea General de las Naciones Unidas. El clima, ahora, es por supuesto muy distinto al de su anterior viaje.
El primer ministro Fidel Castro se marcha dispuesto a acampar en los terrenos de la ONU ante la actitud de la gerencia del Hotel Shelburne y las presiones e interferencias del gobierno yanqui. Sin cuota pero sin amo. No intervención en Cuba, dicen estos carteles.
Fidel Castro es invitado por el gerente del Hotel Teresa, ubicado en el centro del barrio negro de Harlem. Acepta y será el único jefe de gobierno que resida en un ambiente popular. En el Teresa lo visita el premier soviético Nikita Khrushchev. Los intentos de humillar y aislar al líder cubano fracasan. Fidel habla en la ONU. En la isla, millones de cubanos lo escuchan.
Señor presidente, señores delegados, Cuba no era el primer país agredido. Cuba no era el primer país en peligro de ser agredido. En este hemisferio todo el mundo sabe que el gobierno de los Estados Unidos siempre impuso su ley, la ley del más fuerte. Desaparezca la filosofía del despojo y habrá desaparecido la filosofía de la guerra.
Fidel Castro regresa a Cuba con el prestigio de haber enfrentado a los norteamericanos en su propio ámbito.
No importa, no importa que cualquiera de nosotros caiga, lo que importa es que esa bandera se mantenga en alto, que la idea siga adelante, que la patria viva.
La Sierra del Escambray, en el centro de la isla. Este es el teatro escogido para desarrollar una guerrilla contrarrevolucionaria que a través de pequeñas bandas siembra el terror en la zona. Decenas de campesinos son asesinados, incluidos maestros voluntarios como Conrado Benítez, ahorcado mientras alfabetizaba en las montañas. Miles de combatientes y milicianos acuden al llamado para la operación militar conocida como Limpia del Escambray. Las bandas del Escambray
de nuevo,
son
escuchando extracciones del DVD Cuba Caminos de Revolución y tiene subtítulo Los cuatro años que estremecieron al mundo y tiene que ver sobre los primeros cuatro años de la Revolución Cubana y estamos ofreciendo este DVD a cambio de una generosa aportación de parte del público de $100 y con esos $100 además de recibir el DVD, William, pueden recibir también membresía en la gran familia WBAI adquiriendo el derecho a votar en las elecciones de la emisora. Si por alguna razón no pueden pagar los 100 de un cantazo, pues pueden pagar 25 semanales o mensuales. Y en última instancia, si no pueden aportar $100, pues por $25 le pedimos que por favor apoyen a este programa, La Voz Latina, el único programa de contenido social que defiende los intereses de la clase trabajadora que está en contra de la guerra, en contra del imperio y defiende los intereses de los sectores inmigrantes. William, este programa se tiene que sostener en WBAI y solamente el público apoyando a este programa lo puede hacer.
Sí, llámenos si nos llaman al 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950, ustedes pueden contribuir, ya sea con $25 haciéndose miembro de esta estación, o pueden llevarse este CD de $100 y contribuyen con este su programa La Voz Latina y con esta estación. Recuerden que este dinero es un dinero que contribuye con el mantenimiento de la estación, con lo que es la antena,
la antena nada más está en el edificio Empire State Building, y tener una antena allí en el Empire State Building, eso cuesta unos cuantos dólares al mes.
Y debemos recordar, William, que ni usted ni los otros compañeros que no se encuentran ahora, Radamés, ni la compañera Luz, que son parte del colectivo, ni un servidor, Daniel Vila, nosotros, William Camacaro, no recibimos ni un centavo de este dinero. El dinero que estamos solicitando, pues nosotros somos todos voluntarios y por 7 años hemos sido voluntarios en esta emisora. El dinero es para lo que usted dice, para sostener esa antena ahí, y también para el equipo que se está ya comenzando a atrasar aquí en WBAI.
Sí, llámenos al 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950.
Defender la revolución, defender la patria frente a las amenazas de agresión.
Bien, y recuerden que estamos ya llegando a este final, a este su programa La Voz Latina. Recuerden que pueden incluso hasta llamar después que salgamos del aire y pueden decir que quieren dar su aportación para este su programa La Voz Latina, y quieren de alguna manera contribuir. Si contribuyen llevándose el CD, que es un CD extraordinario sobre la Revolución Cubana, ustedes pues su donación sería de $100. Y si no, pueden hacerse miembros por $25 en la estación, llamando al 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950.
Y bueno, no nos podemos despedir hoy sin comunicarle al público que no estuvo allí el miércoles. Como saben, este movimiento en contra de Wall Street ha ido generando más y más fuerza. Pero luego del sábado pasado, cuando la policía abusivamente arrestó a 700 personas en el Brooklyn Bridge, la ciudad se indignó. En cuestión de menos de 4 días se comunicaron todas las personas, trabajadores sindicalizados, estudiantes, jóvenes, desempleados, etcétera. William, te digo, yo jamás he visto en esta ciudad tanta gente convocada y movilizada en tan corto plazo. Para mí, ahí había por lo menos 100,000 personas en
fíjate
la Plaza Folly.
Fíjate que yo me encontré con algunos amigos y eso más o menos me decían 100, había más de 70,000 personas.
Definitivo.
Fácilmente, lamentablemente, la prensa, el New York Times, esto es lo que llaman la prensa mainstream media, no ha dicho absolutamente nada, no ha dado números de cuántas personas participaron en esta protesta este pasado
el miércoles pasado. Una marcha que se convocó y comenzó en Foley Square, que es el centro gubernamental judicial de la ciudad de Nueva York, que queda detrás de la alcaldía. Pero William, la gente no solamente estaba ocupando todo el espacio ahí, también las escalinatas del gran centro judicial, yo creo que es el número 80 Center Street, estaban todas ocupadas las escalinatas por varias miles de personas. Toda esa avenida subiendo por la Lafayette, subiendo hasta Broadway, ocupada de gente, y toda el Broadway desde el 26 Federal Plaza, bajando por Broadway hasta el Parque Zuccotti, donde están establecido el campamento, todo eso por miles y miles y miles de personas. Esto fue la cosa más abrumadora, y a mí lo que me impresionaba era estos personajes que son de Wall Street, que uno sabe que el interés de ellos es el amor de ellos, el primer amor es el dinero, en shock. En total shock, porque hasta ahora se creen la mentira de la prensa burguesa de que estos son dos o tres locos que lo que quieren es derrocar el capitalismo. Ese día se dieron cuenta que en esta ciudad hay decenas, cientos de miles de personas que también se oponen a los abusos del capitalismo y quieren unos cambios drásticos en este país, William. Y eso es el principio. Este domingo también queremos invitar al público, porque este domingo, William, va a haber un concierto de música latina en el Parque Zuccotti, y de nuevo este domingo en vivo a las 5 de la tarde.
Ese es en la Plaza de la Libertad.
La Plaza de la Libertad, que si cogen el tren número 2 hasta Park Street y caminan hacia el sur en la misma Broadway, 3 cuadros, van a llegar ahí. Y va a estar Cofre, Escarioca, Paracta, Earth Driver, A Truth, Rebel Díaz, nuestros compañeros y camaradas Rebel Díaz van a estar ahí, Veritas, Los Libera Beat, y hay muchos grupos que van a estar tocando. Desafortunadamente va a ser acústico, ya que las fuerzas dictatoriales que controlan la ciudad no permiten sonido eléctrico, sonido amplificado ahí. Así que, pero de todos modos van a haber decenas de grupos latinos, y convocamos e invitamos a que toda la comunidad hispanoparlante se dé cita en el Zuccotti Park el Parque Libertad a las 5 de la tarde este domingo.
De nuevo, recuerden que pueden contribuir con este su programa La Voz Latina llamando al 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950, y se pueden llevar esta producción, este CD llamado Los Primeros Cuatro Años de la Revolución Cubana, y ahí podrán pues ustedes ver imágenes, increíbles imágenes en blanco y negro de los primeros años de la Revolución Cubana. Eso es lo que tenemos en el fondo, así que con esto nos vamos a despedir. Queremos que recuerden que aunque estemos fuera del aire, ustedes pueden llamar al 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950, y hacer su donación para este su programa La Voz Latina, hacerse miembro por $25 o obtener esta producción La Revolución Cubana, los cuatro años que estremecieron el mundo, por $100, y a su vez obtener la membresía y contribuir con este su programa La Voz Latina.
Todas las unidades deben dirigirse hacia la sede de sus respectivos batallones en vista de la movilización ordenada para mantener el país.
Así que llamen al 212-209-2950.
La eminencia que se deduce de todos los hechos de las últimas semanas y del cobarde ataque de ayer, de la agresión de los mercenarios. Marchemos a las casas de los milicianos, formemos los batallones y pongámonos a salirle al frente al enemigo con el himno nacional, con la estrofa del himno patriótico, con el grito de al combate.
Bien, y vamos ya despidiéndonos, vamos a despedirnos con una pieza que nos llega,
es el preludio de la invasión de Playa Girón.
Bien, estamos escuchando todavía imágenes.
La más grande operación militar organizada por la CIA.
Al atardecer del 14 de abril, la flotilla formada por 7 barcos esperaba en aguas de Puerto Cabezas.
212-209-2950.
Dictador de Nicaragua, apareció en el muelle con la cara empolvada y rodeado de su escolta. Gritó con desgarro: traedme un par de pelos de la barba de Castro. Y agitó su brazo en la despedida.
Comienza la batalla de Girón. Las primeras víctimas son civiles.
Mi esposo cayó en aquella esquina. Entonces, aquí cayó el José Luis Martínez Paredes. Mi sobrina cayó aquí en este lugar. Entonces, mi hermana cayó aquí, de la arequita esa para allá un poquito.
7 a.m. here at WBAI in New York, 99.5 on your FM dial, streaming at www.wbai.org. That concludes La Voz Latina for today. Normally at 7 o'clock, you'd be listening to As I Please with Simon Locley. He is not here today. Instead, we will have a special edition of 5 o'clock Shadow with Robert Knight. Please stay tuned.
My name is Robert Knight. I'm normally the host of 5 o'clock Shadow, but perhaps abnormally today, here at 2 o'clock, with a very special program to help us advance the cause that is being represented at the Wall Street occupation. By the way, congratulations to Gary Null for his very important rally that he took part in over the past weekend for the anti-nuclear weekend that took place dockside here in New York City. But today we are focused on the eruption of social consciousness that has been precipitated, catalyzed by the youth and the increasingly polychromatic people occupying Wall Street at the corner of Broadway and Liberty. Broadway is indeed funky, as Gary's outgoing music did indicate, funky at the intersection of Broadway and Liberty, where the Wall Street occupation that has inspired so many others across the country continues with great strength, with union participation, with more and more people of poverty, people of color, and all classes, genders, and stripes. WBAI has been involved with and presenting the events from day zero, from the very beginning of that. And we're very proud of that tradition, the muckraking and the radical basis upon which this non-commercial radio network was founded. And having been founded as an educational institution, the Pacifica Foundation also has responsibilities to educate. And today we intend to do exactly that. In addition to presenting the breaking news and the actualities and the sound streams of the General Assemblies and the mic check, and the repetition of the crowd because they are denied loudspeakers, we think it's important to contextualize why so many people are feeling such passion and power in confronting Mammon and confronting the center of economic distortion in the United States in the form of Wall Street. And today we are going to analyze that with a very useful tool. It is our offering to you to support WBAI and help push us even further forward into the future. We are offering you today, as a tax-deductible gift, an encouragement for you to subscribe to WBAI, what I think is the most important and clear film documentary about what those issues are, which is why these PIDs have so instinctively gone to the center of power. They bypassed the Obamas. They bypassed the Congress. They bypassed the letter-writing campaigns. They are manifesting the pain and suffering that we're all feeling. They are going there under the burden of the denial of education as a right with lifelong obligations for student loans. They are there to oppose war. They are there to stop the bailouts, to reward businesses that operate improperly, and to return to social service, social good, the investment in people that has been so long abandoned. What we are offering to help crystallize some of these thoughts and the history of this kind of protest is an extraordinary film called Capitalism is the Crisis. It is a documentary that last year won the Word of the Year Award, and which in great specificity and entertainment unravels the financial crisis in the United States in a systematic way, exposing the fraud in which the wealthy finance capitalists stole trillions of public dollars and are continuing to do so. There has been no crime and punishment for that. And that is another reason why so many people feel this sense of injustice. The poor people, the unemployed, the underemployed have been forced to work increasing hours beyond the length that even Charles Dickens might have imagined. This documentary, Capitalism is the Crisis, this documentary explains the nature of the crisis. It visits the protests against austerity measures and recommends revolutionary paths for the future. And it will demonstrate to you the similarity between recent protests at the G20 summit, the protests in Seattle, and the ones that have now broken out in scores of other cities across the United States. We feel the energy. There's something visceral about this that we know and love and stand up for justice and turning things around and getting them right. But it's also important that we have an academic, an intellectual, a historical framework. Those who learn bad history are indeed doomed to repeat it. But those who learn history well are able to break the pattern. And we are now offering for you to support WBAI and continue this noble mission for the price of $75, the complete DVD set of the film Capitalism is the Crisis. We're asking you to call us up at 212-209-2950 because, well, for one thing, our phones have been under capacity for technical reasons in earlier parts of the day, and so we need to make up some lost time. $75, Capitalism is the Crisis. thank you for those people who are calling at this moment. And we only have an hour to do this, so we're going to move as fast as we can on this end. And we have great faith that you will do the same thing on your end. Let us now begin with a sample of what you can have right now for a call to support tax-deductible Rebel Radio, WBAI. Here is kind of a setting up of the theme of what you will learn, this richness of information in the film, Capitalism is the Crisis.
The engines of corporatism cannot be halted. They are impervious to the will of those who they exploit. They are more powerful than the governments they control. And they have built within them an inevitable kind of mechanism for self-annihilation, because corporations have this strange pathology where they turn everything into a commodity. Human beings become commodities, the natural world becomes a commodity, and you exploit these commodities until exhaustion or collapse. And that's precisely what's happening.
A question that at least runs through my work pretty constantly is what is our threshold to recognize the death spiral, or what is our threshold to recognize that we don't live in a functioning democracy?
These corporate entities are impervious to the will of the citizenry. They have carried out a coup d'etat. They have won. We have lost. We live in a culture that is so utterly awash in lies and propaganda as to create a kind of collective hypnosis or self-delusion, where you have people, through the manipulation of fear and permanent war and self-glorification, in essence clamoring for their own enslavement. And that's extremely difficult to overcome.
Yes, I think we can be contaminated by violence, but I think the truth is that we're also already pretty contaminated by the violence that we see around us, and we're contaminated by not responding, and we're contaminated by being made into slaves and by allowing this to continue. We're contaminated by the situation.
All resistance finally begins with a reorientation of how we relate to the world. In moral terms, what are the people who are the people who run BP or ExxonMobil? They're executioners. They're killers. Not only of the human species, but of the very ecosystem that sustains life on the planet. In moral terms, they propagate systems of death. Quite literally. And unchecked, they will kill us. They'll kill most of us, along with all the other innocent life forms that had nothing to do with the folly of human existence.
One of the things I think is also very important is for us to explicitly acknowledge that war has already been declared. And yeah, there was a coup, and that those in power are waging war on the planet. And we need to start thinking about this in terms of war.
You know, one can go back to the great Christian anarchists like Dorothy Day and Peter Maurin, who understood that essentially severing themselves from the society. I mean, Dorothy Day wouldn't pay taxes. She didn't own anything. This isn't the end of resistance. This is the beginning of resistance. That I think that this particular culture of consumption, this culture built around fossil fuels, works because we give these corporations a lot of money.
Lauren Berlant writes, quote, "The attempt to associate democracy with austerity, a state of liquidity being dried out the way wine dries out a tongue, is fundamentally anti-democratic," end quote. Well, I agree, and so I'm puzzled by why, even after September 2008, after, in a sense, neoliberalism, after certainly the end of the Washington Consensus that organized the world's affairs for two decades or perhaps three decades, after globalization, or at least after all three of these were exposed as something other than simply the way things are, I'm puzzled by why, after 2008, we seem to have no after to globalization or neoliberalism, but more of the same.
We probably are now in a crisis that began in 2007 and really took a nosedive in 2008. when a number of Wall Street banks went under. We probably are in the fourth great crisis of capitalism's history. The first one was what was known as the first Great Depression of the last quarter of the 19th century. The second was the 1930s, the Great Depression of the 1930s. The third was very important to my formation, the crisis of the 1970s.
The world today, the oil-producing countries of the Arab world decided to use their oil as a political weapon. They will reduce oil production by 5% a month until the Israelis withdraw from occupied territories. If the Arab countries keep that pledge, it would reduce their production by 50% in 1 year.
And we've now, it seems, entered the fourth great crisis. It began very notably and interestingly in the housing finance sector. That was a product of the extent to which working people, since the crisis of the 70s, had become dependent on debt in order to sustain their standards of living, especially in the United States. And the rest of the world needed them to sustain their standards of living in the United States because the United States was the consumer of last resort. It was the basis upon which Japanese companies were able to still make profits even after the Japanese downturn in the 90s by selling to Americans. It was the basis for Chinese capitalist development over the last two decades. So American workers whose incomes stayed stable or even went down from the 1980s on, and that was part of the resolution of the crisis, the previous crisis, the primacy of trade unions. Workers worked, people in each family worked, and worked at much, right? But working, and above all, through treating the one asset they really own, which is their family home, as both their retirement savings, assuming that housing prices would continue to go up, or as a basis for taking second mortgages, and consuming on the basis of the borrowing they did on what presumably their houses would yield when they were eventually sold. They became increasingly indebted. And the banks were falling over themselves and promoted by the American government and other governments to lend money to working class people and to lend money to more and more layers of working class people who never really had been part of the American dream, especially black communities. The way in which finance is linked in a very complex way means that when that large sector began to tank as the housing bubble burst in 2006, as it inevitably would as soon as the Federal Reserve raised interest rates in the middle part of the decade, you got the makings of this financial crisis, which then had a knock-on effect. So that's the bind that capitalism's in, and it's a big one. It's a deep one. It is nothing new. Part of the making, constant series of financial crises. This point is that the G7 countries have been very active, so that they date around the world. They were unable to stop this one from cascading around the world. But we saw very quickly that what a, you know, ideological myth it was to believe that the state had pulled out of markets, that markets don't depend on states. As soon as every one of these crises over the last 20 and more years occurred, states ran in to provide liquidity to the banks who were tanking.
Our most urgent task upon taking office was to shore up the same banks that helped cause this crisis. It was not easy to do. And if there's one thing that has unified Democrats and Republicans, and everybody in between, is that we all hated the bank bailout.
It's a big challenge, because what we've seen in the whole way capitalism operates, again, over this neoliberal period of the last 30 years, that is to say, this period of just throwing everything into the market and cutting back everything else, what we've seen is that more and more social wealth is going into banking and financial institutions. They've become sort of the central operators and organizers of how the capitalist market economy works, and they've been siphoning off more and more wealth. And in the process, what that's meant is that financial institutions have come to exercise huge power over workers in a variety of ways. Either directly, we become more and more indebted through mortgage structures, credit cards, other kinds of borrowing that keep us nose to the grindstone trying to pay the bills. But also, these financial institutions are often dominating large corporations, dictating their investment decisions, what factories close, which ones get new investment. And of course, what they basically do is they go for the low-wage areas, the ones with the highest profits, the ones that are taming workers, keeping them under control. And so that is an enormous challenge, because what it means is that workers' organizations can't just think about how they relate to their individual employer. They have to think about the whole system and the structures of power within it. One of the big, big problems we've had in the recent financial crisis is that the banks were bailed out by governments, but nowhere were trade unions and workers' organizations effectively able to mobilize to say, no bailouts without full employment policies, no bailouts without a commitment to green job creation, no bailouts without real social commitments on behalf of where investment will go. And so what's happened is the bank just got it on their own terms. And so the challenge is going to be, in a financialized capitalism, for unions not just to respond to an individual employer, but to begin to actually articulate an alternative vision for how we use the productive resources of our society, how investment decisions are made, because these are coming from public funds. The public purse bailed out the banks. Why doesn't the public then get to say what they ought to do with all those funds? So I think that's a huge challenge, and it's one that if unions can't rise to, we're going to find the same game that's been repeated and repeated.
I mean, financialization in the very limited sense just refers to the way that financial capital takes on a more and more of a hold over the capitalist economy. The way I use financialization is to understand it as a cultural and social process, which is the way finance infiltrates its way into everyday life in more and more profound and insidious ways. So, for instance, the fact that we're all now in incredible debt, that we live our lives under the shadow of credit, that we increasingly are forced to imagine all parts of our lives as investments. So education is no longer a social good, it's an investment in the future. We have to understand all of our lives as sort of cost-benefit analysis.
Now, America's biggest debt burden is now on the shoulders of people who have yet to even start a career. The money owed on student loans now outstrips the nation's credit card debt as the number one financial problem. And a surging unemployment rate of nearly 10% is only likely to worsen the situation.
A ticking time bomb of American debt. This time, all this is owed by college students. $3,000 adding on every second.
If I keep going at the rate that I went the first year, by the time I'm finished, I will have about $120,000 worth of debt. Just from school loans.
And you wonder why students are protesting today at Occupy Wall Street, at Liberty and Broadway, and at nearly 100 more cities and states and districts across the United States, with affinity rallies and occupations taking place around the world. This is WBAI in New York. My name is Robert Knight, and we are offering you the key, the teacher's guide, the basis for why these things are happening now. The brilliance of these young people who came and took over the seat of empire, the heart of financial transgression, is not something that was born in a day. We are offering you the clue to understand the global context, the historical antecedents, and the possible future of this movement in the form of the extraordinary extraordinarily well-distilled film called Capitalism is the Crisis. And among the scholars and experts, well, among them is one of our interlocutors, Chris Hedges, who was on 5 O'Clock Shadow just a few days ago, who has been at the front line of the Wall Street occupation throughout. But also in this film, Derek Jensen, the author of Endgame, David McNally, the author of Global Slump, The Economics and Politics of Crisis and Resistance, Leo Panitch, In and Out of Crisis, The Global Financial Meltdown and Left Alternatives, Imre Zeman, the Canadian Research Chair at the University of Alberta, Robert Chernomas, the co-author of Gatekeepers, 60 Years of Economics, according to the New York Times, Dana Williams, co-author of Anarchy and Society, Wayne Price, the author of Anarchism and Socialism, Reformism or Revolution. These are just some of the dozens of highly informed sources in this extraordinary film, which I think is a companion piece to the rallies. If you're not at Liberty Park at this moment, you can support this movement by supporting the radio station that presents the events and then tries to present the education as to why it's happening and where it could be going. We're asking for you to call now, area code 212-209-2950, where for a pledge of $75, tax deductible, of course, you will receive the extraordinary DVD, film, and affiliated features called Capitalism is the Crisis. The tagline is Capitalism is not in crisis. Capitalism is the crisis. We spent quite a bit of time kind of giving you a sense of the flavor of it. This is just the tip of the iceberg. And by supporting WBAI, you will be able to make sure that all future events are properly covered with people intimate with the movement, with the understanding, on the ground, at the scene. 212-209-2950 is the number. Area code 212. We're going to pause here for a few minutes and try and have you do your part of the responsibility of keeping this radio station going, keeping the movement alive. Interestingly, in this film, one of the songs that is featured is a radical performance of Which Side Are You On? Which Side Are You On? Well, this is the sound I recorded at the Wall Street occupation just a few days ago. There is a hidden resonance, a synchrony of mobilizations, whether it be in Seattle, whether it be in Geneva, whether it was in Alberta with the G20 or the G8 or the G-Wiz. This film, Capitalism is the Crisis, is the solution. Got that? Capitalism is the Crisis is the solution. You can join with mind and spirit the rally that's taking place with these brave people today by being able to talk to your cousins, aunts, uncles, children, and neighbors and ministers, rabbis, imams, about why things have to change. There have been so many ignorant people saying, well, there's no focus. They're not coming forward with demands. Who are they going to vote for? And I mean, really, ladies and gentlemen, as listeners to WBAI, we are smarter than that. And here's how you can help make other people smarter by getting this film. Capitalism is a Crisis. It's 100 minutes of the most wonderfully distilled and clear explanations of why people are up in arms. 212-209-2950. In fact, I'm asking you to be more alacritous, more generous than you might otherwise be, because there were some phone problems here at the station earlier today, software, you know, blah, 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 reboot. So I'm trying to take responsibility for earlier parts of the day because, well, here we are, and the moment of responsibility is upon you. To call 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. Get this film. You'll get it. The kids get it, but you can get it through explicit wordology, examples. As a matter of fact, in about 3 or 4 minutes, I want to give you another sample of this film. And we remember now, this is like the that commercial with the cheese slapper guy with the blades in the bottle. do it now. We can't, you got to call now. We can't do this forever. We can't do this all day, you know. We're only here for an hour. So 212-209-2950 is the number. WBAI is covering the event and educating about it, and you can keep BAI going because BAI was going there when nobody else was. 212-209-2950. We are the air cover part of the war for justice. 212-209-2950. Area code 212-209-2950. And people talk about the college students who are involved, but it's a wide range of people and professions and so on. But specifically for these bright youth of college, consider the fact that they're going to come out of college with a burden that's more long-lasting than Sisyphus. They're going to have to pay the usury rates of twice what they got in college student loans. How can America be number one when there is the squeezing, the exploitation of the thing that makes us better by these Wall Streeters, by these banks, and by colleges like Columbia that conspire with the banks to encourage excessive student loans that will make people indentured servants for the rest of their life? 212-209-2950. Yes, that's covered in this film. Capitalism is the crisis. Oh, 212-209-2950. We got about 5-6 calls in progress, but two more minutes. Let's get another dozen because we really need to have two people pledging per minute to achieve the rate that would be appropriate for this time. 212-209-2950. In this next sample of this great film, Capitalism is the Crisis, we're going to look at the situation of student debt. And in it, there are some clues that you, as a family member, a parent, an aunt, an uncle, an investor in your child's education can do to avoid the traps and tricks of usury, of loans and interest and permanent obligation and indebtedness. Also, this is really key. This movie is so on time. It won the award as the word of the year. And you understand why this is going on by looking at how there were similar protests at G20, similar rallies all around the world, and the anarchist structure in which there is communitarian democracy that takes place. This did not spring out of nothing, and this film explains whence it came. 212-209-2950, $75 gets you the complete package DVD set of Capitalism is the Crisis. Capitalism is not in crisis. It is the crisis. Now, pay close scrutiny to this because you'll understand the Wall Street occupation and all the affiliated ones in the context of a movement that's been building under the sea like a tsunami. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. That's sound from the Wall Street rally that we're hearing underneath right now. But I'll put you on your trust. But please keep calling as you hear something and you have that aha moment. Please keep calling 212-209-2950, $75 for Capitalism is the Crisis. And hear now how these students are burdened, why they are rebelling, and how this egalitarian rally process continues to evolve.
These days in downtown Toronto, police patrol in packs. They can be seen on practically every street corner, walking the beat, riding bicycles.
We're setting up our mounted command post.
They police from the saddle, on the water, and in unmarked vehicles. They are everywhere. Thousands of cops from different cities across Canada have converged on the downtown core. The federal government has spent about $1 billion overall for security on the G8 summit in Huntsville and the G20 summit in Toronto, mainly to protect against terrorist threats. But according to the head of CSIS, who spoke to Peter Mansbridge earlier today, the main security concern is from protest groups.
I think surprisingly little on the terrorism front. We don't think there is anyone who's really interested in doing any harm from that perspective. On the other hand, anarchist groups, multi-issue extremists? Yes, there is. There's a fair bit.
And some of those groups who were out protesting today already clashed with cops. Police may have backed off today, but the riot gear they carry, the steel fencing that surrounds several city streets, this old film studio that is now a makeshift jail, all suggest police aren't likely to back down when the summit starts.
You're going to have to talk to the sergeant.
Why won't you talk to me?
I'm sorry, miss.
They're not talking to the media, and they're warning the public.
All right, let's go through this time. Okay, but make sure you have your ID card, okay?
They're stopping pedestrians,
thank you,
drivers, and people who work in the so-called red zone.
Work ID? How about a piece of work ID? Yeah.
Here we go.
Julie Williams says it's a sight she didn't want to miss.
Which side are you on? Which side are you on? Which side are you on?
I'm curious, and we're seeing yesterday the head of CSIS, which is Canada's spy agency, was saying that one of the biggest threats that they see for this upcoming G20 is not from terrorists, but from anarchists, pointing the finger directly at them. And I'm wondering, what is driving the movement here that brings the anarchists to the G20?
Well, first of all, it's rather surprising that they say that, because I can't think of anybody at a summit who's ever been harmed by an anarchist, or any anarchist who's ever tried to harm anyone taking part in a summit. So, in a way, this is all really scare tactics.
And what is the protest for the anarchists who will show up if they're not there to hurt people? What is the point of being there, and what is the point, the attention they're trying to get with their message?
Well, I actually found it a little surprising in the lead to this that you said that anarchism isn't associated so much with direct democracy as with direct confrontation. Most anarchists think that's exactly what it's about. These summit protests are actually experiments in direct democracy, of decentralized consensus process. What we think of ourselves is creating the seeds of another world.
Okay, so, and why then take this to the doors of the G20?
Well, the G20 for us represents everything that is bogus about the claims to democracy of the people who are not currently leading the world. Right? We think that we don't actually live in democratic societies. People are motivated by democratic ideals. People believe in democracy, but they're sold a bill of goods, basically. The society around them has almost nothing to do with democracy. There are certain values of liberty that everybody incorporates, but those values of liberty are really the soul of anarchism. Most people really accept anarchist values and don't understand that's what they really like in the idea of democracy. And what we're trying to do is create a version, a model of how democracy could actually work without prisons, without police, without courts, without oppression, without inequality, and try to bring that into being. When you do that, you generally find yourself in confrontation with police, whether you seek it or not.
Our message to the G20 is simple. If you could have found not millions, not billions, but trillions of dollars to bail out the banks, the bankers, and the bonuses, why can't you find a fraction of that money to bail out the workers, the climate, the poor, and the future of our children and grandchildren?
Hi, everyone. So my name is Leanna Salvador, and I am just an ordinary student. I have $50,000 in student loans, and I am just an ordinary student. I am just an ordinary racialized woman, and by the time I have paid the interest on my student loans, I will have paid twice as much for the same education as someone who could pay in full up front. And when the face of poverty is dominated by women and racialized people, education can and should be a social equalizer. I am just an ordinary student whose parents always told me that knowledge is power. But what my government tells me is that knowledge is just plain expensive. Is this the kind of world we want to live in? Where only the rich deserve to learn? I'm just an ordinary student who's left to wonder where education fits within a system that values only commodities that can be bought or sold in a marketplace. Where does education fit within a system that relies on a pool of workers who can be forced to work for low wages with no rights. As our public institutions become private schools of business, students are losing the tools that we need to analyze and criticize the status quo. How can we begin to envision a better world when the same free market doctrine is continually being shoved down our throats in ballooning business programs? I am just an ordinary student who believes that education happens both inside and outside of the classroom. And today, class, welcome to Introduction to Democracy. And the best part is, this course is free. So make some noise if you believe that it's high time for this government to shift its priorities. Make some noise. So I just want to say, I say $1 billion for education, not for fortification. Let's show this government what we're asking for, and let's educate them about how to put people first. Thank you very much.
Some of the sounds of protest, you can't tell whether that is at the Wall Street occupation or from this excellent film that really breaks it all down so that you can be with Wall Street even if you're not at the occupation. This is WBAI, and we are offering you the decoding video, the most perfect expression of why this is happening today and where it could be going. It's the film called Capitalism is the Crisis, the most succinct and insightful documentary I have seen on this subject. There's more going on than the corporate television and radio and newspapers are telling you. This helps you understand it and makes you a part of the movement. 212-209-2950 is the phone number. We're offering this for $75 in tax-deductible support for this most important and insightful radio station on earth. WBAI, 212-209-2950. I have something I'd like to share in the precious few minutes remaining, but first we need 12 calls. 212-209-2950. If you would be so kind as to help support the station that is giving not only the live presentation of what's happening at Wall Street and all across the country, but a context with which to understand it. That's so important, so that you will not be hornswoggled when the talking suits and news actors, come on, sir.
Well, it's a very amorphous song. These kids are very enthusiastic, but they're a little confused. What do they want?
And at the same time, you got your CNBC and MSNBC and CBS all the time. And what do you have on these channels? Nothing but Wall Street stock market reports, but not an analysis of why your children are starving. 212-209-2950. We need just 10 more calls at this moment. I want you to hear the part that talks about austerity plans and why you as a human have been disinvested by the stealers of public money. Why there are no social programs when there could be, when the reaction to the economic crisis could be like a New Deal. But we got to cut the cards first before we get a New Deal. 212-209-2950, and the deal is $75 to receive the extraordinary award-winning documentary that really, in a 100-minute sitting, puts it all together for you. 212-209-2950. Oh, good, there's another one. All right, now we need only 9 more people to call at this time. 9 more will unlock the sound that really breaks it down about the conspiracy between the Tea Party and liberals. Liberals and reactionaries. They both go after social spending. 212-209. 8 more calls. Come on now, please. 8 more people join us right now. 212-209-2950. This really is the best thing to put current events in context. It draws from the processes from which these... Oh, 7 more calls, please. 212-209-2950. The processes that have led to the culmination of this perfect moment, which is only the beginning of reversing history in America and around the world. We are in 1967 today, not from nostalgia, but from power of people of different stripes getting together with a mutual madness against what the system is doing. 212-209-2950. Just a half dozen more people needed at this moment. We have only 17 minutes left. And I'd really like to play this 7-minute piece for you because it really kind of pulls the lid off of how the Democrats betray the people that they were elected to represent and do this in conspiracy with the reactionaries and the conservatives. They both say screw the public. They both say preserve the usurious financial institutions. That's why this mob is at Wall Street. This is why the unions a little child shall lead them. 212-209-2950, a tax-deductible $75 pledge. Get you this documentary right away, 212-209-2950. Only need 5 more people, 212-209-2950. See, I have to pretend to be responsible and urge you to call so that we make up money for the station, to make up for the times that our phones were not completely working. Won't you please take responsibility for that, somebody? Thank you, somebody. Yay! Okay, 4 more calls. 4 more calls. 4 more calls. Thank you, thank you, thank you. 4 more people call right now. As soon as we get those 4 more calls, I will give you the latest, analyze this film and try to get just some of the most pungent portions of it for your enthrallment. There's another one. Thank you. 3 more people. 212-209-2950. The more quickly you call. Okay, 2 more. Yay! Okay, we only need 2 more. 212-209-2950. I'm going to put you on your faith. I want to educate as well as be responsible for being here along with Michael G. Haskins when you supported WBAI and advanced the revolution and made it shareable with other people. So 212-209-2950. I'm going to put you on your faith. I hope we make those needed number of phone calls at the moment. But I love you, and I know you love WBAI, so please call 212-209-2950. $75. Capitalism is the crisis. Here now is the big reveal about the conspiracy against you.
Simple definition is governments have budgets, and they have revenues, and they have expenditures. And if the expenditures exceed the revenues, they run off deficits, and a series of more than 1 year of deficit runs into debt. And the question is, where did it come from, and what would you do about it? And austerity is a right-wing view of what to do about these deficits and debts. So what it means to them is to cut, essentially, spending on social welfare programs. There are many other things that you could do. There are many things you could do better to get rid of the debt, the deficit. But they've chosen to do it because it's part of class warfare. In fact, in Canada, Stats Canada did a study years ago of where the debt came from that the 95 Liberals got into power and fought that debt. And they concluded that 94% of the debt did not come from spending on welfare programs. 50% of it came from tax cuts and 44% came from high interest rates. And yet the liberals, not the conservatives, decided to attack the deficit with austerity. And so they cut program spending, which is health, education, welfare, housing, to 50-year lows. And the conservatives have continued that process. The great danger, of course, is if Harper wins a majority, we'll get English-style cuts, austerity, to the budget, which will make it even worse. Even though the Canadian debt isn't very bad at all, actually. And as I said earlier, there are many, many better ways of fighting the debt than cutting funding for housing, welfare, unemployment, etc.
What was interesting is that many of the people were talking about that Keynesianism was backed, and even the ruling class members were now all Keynes and disciples of Keynes. What they didn't understand is that the capitalist system and the state and the state and the capitalist society will do anything to preserve the integrity of the system. So if it means that they have to engage in saving capitalist firms, if it means that they have to pump money industrial society that will allow consumption to maintain itself at a certain level so as not to destroy the system, they will do it. It's not a commitment to any socialistic policies or any Keynesian type of policy. They will do whatever it takes. But what they want to do is to weaken and discipline the working class. All across North America, we can see the attack on teachers' unions. We can see the attack on organized workers telling us we need to reduce our excessive demands that are causing economic difficulties in society. It has nothing to do with wages, but it's a way to discipline us so that when economic upturn takes place, we will be so weakened that we will give away anything just to preserve these alienated jobs. Which is the unfortunate thing is that labor, organized labor, is not, you know, defining things from a class perspective. They're still slavishly hanging on to Keynesian ideas about this increased spending during economic recession so that we can have overall economic vitality, without realizing that it's not about economic vitality, it's about the disciplining of the working class.
It seems to mean that this provides an excuse to go after the rights of working people, particularly in public service. And it provides a framework in which a lot of Western governments have been trying to dismantle public service. And I think the public service jobs and the public service kind of mentality. And I think the motivations of doing that are pretty obvious. There are a few ideological true believers on the right who actually think that will make things better, but I don't think there's very many. I think it's mostly a fairly cynical belief that the union movement has been more powerful in North America within the public sector, and that's a way to weaken unions and therefore to weaken a voice for alternative economic approaches. I think also that there are some cost savings associated with it, but I don't think they're really driven by cost savings. You see, the right time and again will advocate things like public-private partnerships that actually cost taxpayers more, but it puts that money into the pockets of their ideological friends. So, I mean, I think one of the biggest problems from the right's perspective is that unionized workers and public sector workers have acted on a break on their really extreme plans for our society. So that again, they're looking for ways to defund the left. So they're looking for ways to make our voice less effective.
Well, we're entering, it's interesting, in the months leading up to the G20, and in particular among the Anglo-Saxon countries, that is English-speaking countries, there was a lot of talk of pain and 10 years of pain, and that was too much for people. So then they started to talk about 10 years of austerity. And what they mean by austerity pretty much, in a nutshell, and I'm not being cliched here, is having workers, and in particular the public sector, and workers, 97% of us who have to depend on public services, who can't afford to order our books from Amazon.com or go to a private health clinic, drive a car, take a taxi, etc., pay for the crisis by two things: by really weakening the public sector, and that includes wage freezes, contracting out, privatization, things like that, and also cutting public services. And really, I think the broad thing is, with the idea of pain, is to get the public to expect less, to kind of take away this nascent sense of social solidarity that working people might have in their communities, and replace it, or I wouldn't so much say replace it, but really reinforce this sense of the atomized individual.
The limits are in two kinds. One is an economic limit. At a certain point, people will go bankrupt, and the financial crisis is sort of representation of that. But ultimately, the real limit to this is to the extent to which working people will resist this. To what extent will they, to use an old phrase again, reduce the value of labor power? And if you're willing to work for less wages, and if you're willing to pay more and more debt, what is the bottom to being actually paying off this debt? And that's an interesting question. We don't know. I mean, people will begin to work for lower and lower wages and pay more and more of the money out of debt. And one of the prospects is that the bottom to this is hard to discover. And so it really, always at the end of the day, Lenin has a phrase, something along the lines that there's no crisis that capitalists can't get out of if the working class is willing to pay for it. And that's part of what we're seeing. The United States, they seem to be, there's a book called What's the Matter with Kansas, where he describes working class people who are completely in support of cutting capital gains taxes. As long as in exchange for that, they can get some cultural advantages. They're opposed to abortion. They want intelligent design taught in schools. And they are indifferent. In fact, they're more than indifferent. They're actually supporting tax cuts for the rich and deregulation. They have, for some reason, which is hard to explain, actually identified with their exploiters.
Yeah, you know, the state was going to execute me by firing squad, but I got off on a technicality. I couldn't afford to buy them the bullets. This is WBAI. I'm Robert Knight, and we're talking about the insanity of austerity and the tricks and secrets of Wall Street, where a global occupation centered there is taking place in cities and states all around this country and around the world. And we are offering you the air cover to that rally, to that demonstration, to this movement in the form of the extraordinarily informed documentary called Capitalism is the Crisis. It's not in crisis, it is the crisis. For a pledge of $75 to keep this radio station, this educational institution of the Pacifica Foundation broadcasting and always on the scene of important things like this, we need you to call. In fact, we need another dozen phone calls right now in the next 7 minutes in order to honorably acquit the opportunity for your participation. Even if you're not at Wall Street, you can be a teacher. You can understand why your kids are being ripped off with these the conspiracies of the universities and the academic loans. And why the hell is the government not providing education anyhow? Come to think of it. All of these issues are addressed and explained. There is a piece I wanted to play for you about how these young and old rebels today at Wall Street and everywhere else, they're beyond Facebook. The part of it talks about the unions and the affinity for public service workers and so on. And was it not beautiful to see the mob that overflowed the entire federal district of Foley Square from an overhead shot yesterday? Was it not springtime in America to see people who would never be talking to each other, walking, marching, and sharing fear and courage together? 212-209-2950 for a pledge of $75. You get the complete package of this DVD. Capitalism is a crisis. We need a dozen calls. Who will be the second one? We need 11 now. 212-209-2950. We are in the closing minutes, and we have had only an hour. Hugh Hamilton will be coming up with more special inspiration today. But right now, it's kind of important that we support what I think is the most succinct and timely a recent documentary that really anticipates what's taking place today, anticipates it better than the cops, anticipates it better than the trillionaire Bloomberg, anticipates it better than CBS all the time on the news. 212-209-2950. We need 10 more calls. Area code 212-209-2950. The film stipulates that the 2008 financial crisis in the United States was a systemic fraud in which the wealthy finance capitalists stole trillions of public dollars. No one was jailed for the crime, the largest theft of public money in history. This documentary explains the nature of capitalist crisis. It visits the protests against austerity measures, and it recommends revolutionary paths for the future. This is Rebel Radio, WBAI. We need nine more calls right now. 212-209-2950. Please help us go out with a bingo. We are the educational auxiliary of the brave and beautiful people who are in the street and camped out, sleeping overnight in the rain. We need to understand to take their courageous act beyond that into our communities, our PTAs, our schools, our society, in order to have a useful set of demands, a useful set of knowledge, a teachable moment. That is what this is. And this is a reachable radio station. Teachable, reachable, 212-209-2950, area code 212. In the background, sound from the Wall Street occupation. All right. We need, what is it, eight or nine more calls right now. In the remaining 4 minutes, can two people call simultaneously, get some indication of that? Sometimes the bell rings, sometimes they don't, but we need you to make that call now. 212-209-2950. This is such a time. Such a time in the world. And there is a great vivaciousness to be shared at the site of the protest, but there is a tremendous amount of information that also needs to be widespread from kindergarten to postgrad. And this film, Capitalism is a Crisis, a documentary film. Capitalism is not in crisis, it is the crisis. Reminds me of an old favorite saying of mine. The purpose of a system is what it does. 212-209-2950, area code 212-209-2950. I'd like to thank everyone who has been calling, and we're trying to, you know, take up the weight from earlier in the day when the phones were not working at full capacity. But somebody call in and pledge right now. Let's just prove that they are working at this moment. And that the system hasn't crashed. Well, although we are kind of anticipating the crash of another system, the Wall Street banking system of theft. Somebody call up 212-209-2950 and pledge to get this premium, this extraordinary. This is the Rosetta Stone. This is the key to the wider world that surrounds the Wall Street occupation. 212-209-2950. Who will make that goodbye moment call for this special 1 hour that we have shared, trying to get the information to you as succinctly and as quickly as possible. 212-209-2950. I came in with bells on. Will I leave with bells on? That's up to you. If you choose to, yay! If you choose to support WBAI, 212-209-2950. And, We got to move fast because history is moving faster than ever before. We are in the red shift of social transformation. No, blue shift is coming faster. 212-209-2950. You get the 100 minutes of enlightenment. You know, Chris Hedges, who talks with BAI. Chris Hedges is in this. Derek Jensen, Emery Seaman, David McNally, Leo Panitch, Robert Chiminos, Dana Williams, Wayne Price, and a cavalcade of so many others. 212-209-2950. You are beautiful. You are a movement, whether you are sleeping on the concrete in Liberty Park or whether you're part of the virtual liberation, that is, part of Pacifica, WBAI, and this video, Capitalism is a Crisis, $75. Please call 212-209-2950. And that concludes my sojourn today on the 2 o'clock shadow. Normally at 5 o'clock, well, no, wait, I don't do nothing normal. But thank you, Michael T. Haskins, for engineering. And thank you, Pacifica, for existing, and BAI for being right there in your face in the street. I'm Robert Knight for WBAI. Thank you for supporting this most important radio station in the world.
October 10th at 10 p.m., Sugar in My Bowl will present composer and phenomenal guitarist Pat Metheny. Join me, Joyce Jones, and Hank Williams as we explore Pat's career, what's it all about, and do our part to help continue this listener-supported experiment. That's Monday, October 10th at 10 p.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web.
This is Phil Donahue, and you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5.
You've got to start off each day with a song. Now, even when things go wrong, you feel better, you even look better. I'm here to tell you that you'll be a go-getter. Now the way that you shake my hand will tell me how I stand. Now isn't it better to go through life with a smile and a song than walking around with a face 11 miles long? Now you know that you can't go wrong. If you start off each day with a song, you've got to start off each day with a song.
Oh, sing it, Jimmy boy.
Even when things go wrong,
sing it for the hoi polloi.
You feel better, you'll even look better. Ah, that music, it does something to me. I wish I knew what it was. Last night I was telling Umbriago about my latest concerto called Tony's Pushcart. He said, Tony's Pushcart, how does it go? I said, it doesn't go, you have to push it. I got a million of them. Now you know that, so you can't go wrong.
Yeah.
If you start off each day with a song, you've got to start off each day. Boys, please, soft, a little more fortissimo. I want to relate a yarn. Turn back the pages of history and what do you see? Madison Square Garden or Odeo. And there I was, interviewing a prize-winning cow. I asked her to tell the radio public how she feels. She said, moo. She's contented. I'm contented, but her husband ain't. So what happens? The bull ups to me. I ups to him, and without any preliminaries, I'm flat on my back. Being a gentleman, I apologized. But the bull's not satisfied. He demands an autopsy. So I grabs him by the tail, and what happens? He flips his tail. I lands on his head. He flips his head. I lands on his tail. He's playing ping pong with me, and I'm losing. Just then, the bull is ready to charge again. I gets an idea. I start singing, south to the border, down Mexico way. And what happens? The bull starts crying. But irregardless, I keeps on singing. This time with the castanets. That's too much for the bull. He collapses. A cheer goes up. I'm saved, and the moral is, you gotta start off each day with a song. You've got to start off each day with a song.
Oh boy, you're singing now.
Even when things go wrong.
Oh Jimmy, you're a wow.
You feel better. You know, I'm walking down Broadway and who taps me on the shoulder? My pal, hit him in the head, Schwartz. I said, who are you working for now? And he said, the same bunch, the wife and their kids. Now, isn't it better to go through life with a smile and a song than walking around with a face 11 miles long? Now you know that, so you can't go wrong.
Yeah.
If you start off each day with a song.
Thank you, James. Starting us off on the second Saturday in October, I'm David Rothenberg, Angel Ramos in the house, and we are listening. They did that again. They've changed these machines so they go on to the... Sean will come in and fix that, and so I... Because I know you have to press a couple of buttons to make sure that it goes on to so that they don't continue.
That's why I'm on this side.
Anyway, it's a beautiful Saturday. It's a beautiful weekend. Monday's a holiday. And the Republicans have... Religion has again polarized. Down in Texas, according to the New York Times today, listen to this paragraph. As a child, I was naive. I thought religion was a healing institution in our society. I've learned otherwise. A Texas pastor introduced Rick Perry at a major conference of Christian conservatives, here on Friday, as a genuine follower of Jesus Christ, and then walked outside and attacked Mitt Romney's religion, calling the Mormon Church a cult and stating that Mr. Romney is not a Christian. The comments by the pastor, Robert Jeffers of Dallas, injected a potentially explosive issue into the presidential campaign, the belief held by many evangelicals that Mormons are not Christians, to say nothing of what it says about Muslims, Jews, and Buddhists. So religion, once again, intruding its pretty head into the atmosphere.
I'm trying to figure out, well, where's the preacher? Because I know that guy's not it. To be preaching hatred is not to be a follower of Christ.
But it's more than it's not only hatred. It's taking a strong political stand. He waits till a presidential debate to get attention on something like that.
Well, you know, I've seen that over and over this last week.
Well, that's That's why religion and politics, that's why we have separation of church and state. Mm-hmm. So we're in a fundraising drive, as BAI is. There's about 3 days in the year when we're not in a fundraising drive. I think Groundhog's Day, Shavuos, and Tisha B'Av. This morning, if you make a gift of $250 for accumulated theater going, you'll get $300 worth of theater tickets. If you're new to the arena on Saturday mornings, we get you to the theater and you pledge to BAI and we tell you about different shows. If you're a frequent flyer and you want to go to a lot of shows, you'll get an extra little bonus at it. If you give $250, you get $300 worth of theater tickets. And I'll give you an example of two of the shows that we have. Preview started this week. We still have some more tickets for Sisters, a new musical that's opening in a couple of weeks at the St. Luke's Theater on West 46th Street. Is it West 46? It's on West 46th, right between 8th and 9th. Sisters is an uplifting musical journey of a multi-generational African-American family. It's based on interviews conducted with women of color over a six-year period, and it uses songs that were made famous by artists that from Billie Holiday to Beyoncé. I think we have what we have left for this week are just Thursday night and next Sunday afternoon. But we have some other tickets for the month of October, and obviously it's a $65 gift to BAI to get you a pair of tickets. And obviously they've gone fast since most of the month they've gone. So if you're even slightly interested, I would suggest you check in right now. We have tickets for the next three Thursdays, the 13th, the 20th, and 27th. Saturday matinee at 4:30 on October 29th. And then on Sundays, this Sunday, and then Sunday the 30th. Everything else in October went for Sisters, so those of you who are even vaguely interested, I would say suggest right now you call 212-209-2950. It's $65 for a pair of tickets for Sisters. If you want to pledge $250, you get $300. Now, here's a new show, preview starting when for this show? They start next Saturday. It stars Academy Award-winning actress Ellen Burstyn. Not only has she won an Academy Award, she's one of the, I think it would be a good quiz question. Name the actors or actresses who have won Oscars, Emmys, and Tonys. Ellen Burstyn's one of them. I think Rita Moreno is another. I can't think of anyone else who has won all three. Mm. Ellen Burstyn is in a new play. Preview start next Saturday. It's called The Atmosphere of Memory. It's being sponsored by the wonderful Labyrinth Theater Company. That's a company that Philip Seymour Hoffman and John Ortez started a few years ago, which has done some of the best theater I've seen. They were at the Public for many years. Now they have their own theater on Bank Street. The Atmosphere of Memory is by David Barr Katz. I can only give you an outline of what the play is. It's because no one's seen it. It's about a young playwright who has written his masterpiece, a play that's about his growing up. And the actress that they cast to play the part of his mother in the play is his real mother, played by Ellen Burstyn. And the family goes into a tizzy because what the play says and what their life is, according to different members of the family, is different. It's called The Atmosphere of Memory. Now you understand the title. Ellen Burstyn stars as the mother, who's the actress that's playing the part created based on her life. So tickets for The Atmosphere of Memory we have next Saturday night at 8, next Sunday at 7, and then the whole following week, Tuesday through Sunday. And that's $70 for a pair of tickets to see Oscar-winning actress Ellen Burstyn at the Labyrinth Theater Company's The Atmosphere of Memory. Our number for tickets for both of those shows, Sisters at the St. Luke's and Ellen Burstyn in The Atmosphere of Memory,
212-209-2950.
Thank you so much, Angel. And here's, while you're deciding whether you want to go to the theater and support BAI, here's John Legend.
Oh,
I'm in love with you, but this ain't the honeymoon. Past the infatuation phase, right in the thick of love. At times we get sick of love. It seems like we argue every day. I know I misbehaved, and you've made your mistakes, and we both still got room left to grow. And though love sometimes hurts, I still put you first, and we'll make this thing work. But I think we should take it slow. We're just ordinary people. We don't know which way to go, 'cause we're ordinary people. Maybe we should take it slow. Take it slow. Oh, this time we'll take it slow. Take it slow. Oh, this time we'll take it slow. This ain't a movie, no. No fairy tale conclusion, y'all. It gets more confusing every day. Sometimes it's heaven sent, then we head back to hell again. We kiss, then we make up on the way. I hang up, you call. We writhe and we fall, and we feel like just walking away. As our love advances, we take second chances. Though it's not a fantasy, I still want you to stay. We're just ordinary people. We don't know which way to go, 'cause we're ordinary people. Maybe we should take it slow. Take it slow. Time will take it slow, take it slow. Oh, this time will take it slow, take it slow. Maybe we'll live and learn, maybe we'll crash and burn. Maybe you'll stay, maybe you'll leave, maybe you'll return. Maybe another fight, maybe we won't survive. Time will take it slow, take it slow. Oh, this time will take it slow, take it slow, slow. This time will take it slow, take it slow. Oh, this time we'll take it slow.
Well, I know we're supposed to be on the air, but I'm trying to figure out how to work out this machine. What I'm asking, Sean, is instead of telling us how much long, I want to know at the beginning how long the song is, and then it tells you how much left is left in it, rather than it's starting from scratch. In other words, that's 7:04. Elaine Stritch is going to sing for 7 minutes. Okay, well, she's worth it. You know, This is on-the-job training for my electronics. Give me another 10 years and I think I'll know what to do. I saw a couple of movies this week that I recommend. I know no one's listening at 8:15, but I'll tell people anyway. Moneyball, which has gotten great reviews, Brad Pitt, Jonah Hill. And I was down in Florida for a few days, and I took three women with me, all of a certain age, none of them baseball fans, and they liked it, not as much as I did, I don't think. But it's not, you don't have to be a baseball fan. It's not, certainly not a chick flick, but it's about the money and the deals and the maneuvering behind the scenes in it, with a baseball club. It could be any part of business. Brad Pitt's good. Jonah Hill is wonderful in it. But the guy who's playing the manager, in the middle of the picture, I'm thinking to myself, Art Howe, who was the manager, who's sort of this southern, I guess southern, pot-bellied, he's been there, you know, he's like the old elephant in the circus. He's been there forever, knows it. And I'm saying, geez, they must have gone down to Memphis, Tennessee, gone to a minor league ballpark, gone into the dugout and pulled this guy out and said, you, play yourself. And suddenly I realized it was Philip Seymour Hoffman. This is about the third movie he's done that to me where I had no idea who it was. He's such a chameleon. And I don't think he'll get the attention because it is so natural and such a convincing performance. Until you know that it's Philip Seymour Hoffman, you just think that they've taken this redneck blob and plunked him down in the middle of this movie. That's how good he is. And Moneyball's a terrific film. The other picture I saw also has Philip Seymour Hoffman, much more recognizable, but equally fine. It's called The Ides of March. George Clooney and Ryan Gosling are the main figures in it, along with Philip Seymour Hoffman. Clooney's running for president. His campaign is being handled by Hoffman and Ryan Gosling. Paul Giamatti is behind-the-scenes guy for the opponent in the Democratic primary. It's a good political movie. In the second half, it gets a little melodramatic, but my interest never wavered. And that's, you know, my idea of a good movie is if in the middle of it, I don't think, what do I have to shop for dinner? Or did I do the laundry? And neither Moneyball or Ides of March, two big budget mainstream movies, usually not my, you know, I go to the Lincoln Plaza and Cinema Village and IFC and Film Forum to see the documentaries and the foreign pictures and the independents. Because you see better pictures that way for the most part. You don't have to see Jennifer Aniston deciding whether she will or will not sleep with this guy like she did in the last 12 movies. So I enjoyed both Moneyball and The Ides of March. Recommend them without hesitation. And that's that for the movies. Now, for the theater, of course, we're raising money and we want you to go support us and get you to the play at the theater at the same time. I'm going to tell you, we have so many shows, I'm going to do two, three at a time, and you have to sort of settle this all out. I didn't know what Asuncion was. That's the title of a new play by Jesse Eisenberg. He was the young man who won an Oscar nomination. He was the lead last year in The Social Network, that movie about the creation of Facebook. Is that what it was?
Yes.
Facebook. And he's he's not your typical young leading man. There's something sort of slightly off, in the positive sense. He's off center. Well, he's starring in this new play, which he wrote. It's called Asuncion. And Asuncion, I looked in the dictionary to see what it meant, and it didn't mean anything because it's not there. And then I looked under the geological. It's a city in Paraguay. Now, why it's titled there? The play is about two young men who insist they're not racist. Everything in their life is about how progressive they are and that they condemn American imperialism. And this is like the young people, hopefully many of the young people of today. What happens in their lives, the two young guys, they're all involved in black studies. And what happens when a young woman who is not of their Caucasian persuasion becomes into their lives and becomes their new roommate at their college dorm? It's called Asuncion. Why they call it that, we'll find out. But Jesse Eisenberg wrote it. He stars in it. It's coming to the, the Cherry Lane Theater? Yeah, on Commerce Street. One of the oldest and most memory-filled off-Broadway houses. Asuncion, starring Jesse Eisenberg in a play that he wrote, starts previews this Thursday. We have tickets for Thursday, Friday, two performances on Saturday, and Sunday matinee this week. $70 to BAI, and you get a pair of tickets. And a second play that starts previews this week is very prestigious Playwrights Horizon, a theater company that has, well, if you know Playwrights Horizon, some of the plays I've seen there when they were in their infancy before they moved to Broadway were Driving Miss Daisy, which won the Pulitzer Prize, Sunday in the Park with George, which moved to Broadway and won the Pulitzer Prize, Wendy Wasserstein's The Heidi Chronicles, which moved to Broadway and won the Pulitzer Prize. What was that play with I Am My Own Wife, about the man who was the transvestite spy in the Czechoslovakia takeover? That I saw at the Playwrights Horizon, moved to Broadway, won the Tony Award. So everybody pays attention when there's a new play coming to Playwrights Horizon. This one is called Milk Like Sugar, and it stars Tanya Perkins, who many of us know from her prize-winning performance in Jelly's Last Jam and in Caroline or Change. This is a play about it tells the story of, by the way, it was done in California and the LA papers gave it rave reviews. Variety called it one of the works of art for which this year, 2011, will be remembered. It's about a 16-year-old girl, an African-American girl, who gets her choice: honor the pregnancy pact she made with friends or find the path to a brighter future. And a lot of young girls make pregnancy packs. That's a whole story. It's called Milk Like Sugar. And previews start this week. We have tickets remaining for when? Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday matinee and evening. And a $70 gift to BAI gets you a pair of tickets. So there's 212-209-2950. Milk Like Sugar or Asuncion. If you want to make a gift of $250, if you go to the theater a great deal through us, if you make a pledge of $250, you get $300 worth of. It's a little bonus, a little capitalism lure that we throw out there in this non-capitalist station.
Because we are on Wall Street, it just infects us.
But we have no commercials, which makes us the non-capitalist station. Doesn't mean that we're anything bad. It just means that we're of the people.
Yes, we're not into the maximization of profit.
Very well put. If you just tuned in, we have tickets for I announced tickets for a couple of other shows. A new musical, Sisters, at the St. Luke's, the theater at St. Luke's, a musical about the journey of the African American woman in America, based on interviews, and it's being produced by one of the best dancers I've ever seen on Broadway, Hinton Battle, who was in Sophisticated Ladies and Jelly's Last Jam, many shows. Sisters is a musical about the journey of the African-American woman. We have tickets for several different performances in October. Not that many, because more than half of the tickets went last week when we first announced it. Mm-hmm. But we still have some tickets for Sisters this Thursday, next Sunday afternoon, and then dates in the following weeks. And that's $65 for a pair of tickets. What was the other show that we offered? Oscar-winning Ellen Burstyn, starring in a new play called The Atmosphere of Memory, down at the Bank Street Theater. That's also $70 for a pair of tickets. So 212-209-2950. If none of those are of interest to you, I don't know why you're listening. I don't know why you're in New York. I don't know.
And you happen to be listening to WBAI 99.5 FM.
Listener-sponsored radio.
Listener-sponsored radio. We're slightly left of center, you know, literally and figuratively.
A lot of people say they don't that they don't go to the theater. I think they've been priced out, because when I first came to New York, the theater audience were not tourists spending a lot of money. They were the social workers, the teachers, the librarians. They would buy their $3 tickets and they would enjoy the best of theater. And they have been sort of eased out of the theater because of the economics of Broadway. If you notice, most of our shows that we're offering this year are off-Broadway. The Broadway producers are not particularly interested in cultivating this audience.
They don't want a new audience because they have the, you know.
Well, for some reason, in years past, Broadway shows would be interested in cultivating this audience. But the big musicals are interested in the people who will pay $250 a ticket, I don't know, a family of four, you can go to the theater. That used to, many of us grew up with our parents taking us to the theater because for $10, four of you could see a show.
Well, if you have excess capital, then you can do that, but yeah, most people don't.
But when they come in to New York and they come in on the corporate, with the corporate sponsorship, they can, well, they're not bringing their families, they're bringing their Tootsies.
Yes, well, they can afford their Tootsies.
So you're our Tootsies. All right, all you Tootsies, 212-209-2950. Go to the theater, see Sisters, the new musical at St. Luke's.
See a show, all bring a friend.
Bring an enemy.
Invite somebody from outside, have some conversation, go down to Wall Street. Believe it or not, you'll enjoy yourself.
Asuncion at the Cherry Lane Theater with Jesse Eisenberg, who was an Oscar nominee last year for The Social Network. Ellen Burstyn, who is an Oscar winner, a Tony winner, and an Emmy winner, is appearing in a new play preview starting next Saturday, The Atmosphere of Memory. All good opportunities for you. Call us at 212-209-2950. Let me tell you about one other play. Starting on the 23rd of October, Castle 2 yes. is going to be performing. Many of you who've seen Castle 1, four people, Angel Ramos, one of them, four people who had done 70 years in prison between them. It ran for a year off Broadway. It's still continuing to play. You're going to Rutgers this week.
Yeah,
colleges and prisons and churches and conferences run by criminal justice people. Well, it's been so successful that we have a new castle, and that's four new people with four different stories, their lives. The actors are, in fact, the people. Four people who between them have done 60 years. One of them is Victor Rojas, one of the guys that answers the phone here, a former resident of the castle. And we've done three performances. This will be the fourth. It's at the on the 23rd of October. It's at the Castle on 140th Street. And if you want to sponsor a person at risk, we invite many people, men and women, who have been either on probation, parole, or in trouble because, well, I'll give you an example. But if you want to be a sponsor, it's $10 a person. And I've told this story. I told the story 2 weeks ago. The first time we did Castle 2, sitting in the front, was a young man, 25 or so, and tears were coming down his cheeks. And at the end, during the Q&A, he said, "I always thought I was alone, but I know there are people now." And he was one of the people that you, the BAI listeners, sponsored. Last week when we did it at Baruch College, one of the young men in the audience, who was a kid, must have been about 20, said, "I've been at the crossroads of my life." He said, I listened to your stories, and I've done a lot of the things that you all did that got you into prison, and I don't think I can do what you've done. I don't think I can go through that. Thank you. This is a wake-up call for me." That's powerful when the theater can have that effect, when somebody can articulate it that clearly, right then on the spot. Usually we hear, I know you, Angel, your other cast members, you'll run into people weeks or months later and they tell you the impact that it had because you don't get that immediate gratification, although sometimes you do. Anyway, BAI people have been very generous in sponsoring. I got a call this week from a woman who said she wants to come on the 23rd. She has about eight people she wants to bring. They're recovering addicts and alcoholics, and she said it would have a great impact on them. Can we come? And I said, I will try and get sponsorship for them. If you want to see the castle too, and I recommend it, it's on Sunday the 23rd at 3 o'clock. It's $20 a person. If you want to sponsor a person at risk, it's $10 a person. And we're at
212-209-2950.
That's again, 212-209-2950. Now here's Elaine Stritch at Liberty from one of the best one-person shows. You know, people say, "I don't like one-person shows." And then I say, "Did you like Leguizamo?" "Yeah, but that was good." "Did you like Whoopi Goldberg?" "Yeah, but that was good." Elaine Stritch, alone on the stage. Here she is opening her second act. I laughed and just had a wonderful time. Here she is from her show at Liberty.
Yeah.
She's opening the second act.
What did Richard Burton mean, almost?
Ha ha ha!
Not long ago, I was talking to Stephen Sondheim about his song, I'm Still Here. I told him that I had heard women in their 60s sing I'm Still Here, 50s even, and a couple of times in their 40s. I'm still here. Where have they been? I mean, it's ridiculous. And so I told him that, not that he asked me or anything, but I told him that I would never touch that song until I was, what, 80 years old. That makes sense to me. 80, I'm still here. But you know, it is such a great song. I'm not going to wait 20 years to sing it. What are you laughing at? Good times and bum times, I've seen them all, and my dear, I'm still here. Plush velvet sometimes, sometimes just pretzels and beer. I'm here. I've stuffed the dailies in my shoes, strummed ukuleles, sung the blues, seen all my dreams disappear, but I'm here. I've slept in shanties, guest of the WPA, but I'm here. Danced in my scanties, $3 a night was the pay, but I'm here. I've stood on red lines with the best, watched while the headlines did the rest. In the Depression, was I depressed? Nowhere near. I met a big financier, and I'm here. I've been through Gandhi, Wally, and Windsor's affair, but I'm here. Amos and Andy, Marjan and platinum hair, but I'm here. I got through Amy's Irish Rose, 5 Dion babies, Major Bowles, had heebie-jeebies, 4 BBs, bathysphere. I lived through Brenda Frazier, and I'm here. I've gotten through Herbert and J. Edgar Hoover. Gee, that was fun and a half. You've been through Herbert and J. Edgar Hoover. Anything else is a laugh. I've been through Reno. I've been through Beverly Hills. And I'm here. Reefers and vino, rest cures, religion and pills. But I'm here. Been called a pinko, commie tool, got through its stinko by my pool. I should have gone to an acting school, that seems clear. Still, someone said she's sincere, so I'm here. Table one day, next day it goes into hock, but I'm here. Top billing Monday, Tuesday you're touring in stock, but I'm here. First you're another slow advance, then someone's mother, then your camp, then you career from career to career. Almost through my memoirs, and I'm here. better yet, sorry, I thought you were Hoos's. Whatever happened to her? Good times and bum times, I've seen them all and my dear, I'm still here. Posh velvet sometimes, sometimes just pretzels and beer, but I'm here. I have run the gamut, A to Z, three cheers and damn it, c'est la vie. I got through all of last year, and I'm here. Christ knows, at least I was there.
Now that's show business. Now that's Stritch belting it out.
Yeah,
Elaine,
you know.
Elaine Page is pretty good in the current production, but when Stritch sings it, you know that this dame has been there, and she's still here. Stephen Sondheim's song from Follies. We don't have tickets for Follies, but you should see it. Now someone, a listener, called and said, what did Ellen Burstyn win all her awards for? She won her Oscar for Alice Doesn't...
Live Here Anymore.
Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, which became
right.
the... stepping stone for the TV series Alice that our friend Linda Lavin was in.
I see that. Yes.
Who we're going to see tomorrow in the play. She's in a play at the Vineyard Theater. She won her Tony Award for Same Time Next Year, and she won her Emmy Award for her guest appearance on A Law and Order in 2009. So she's one of the few people that has won all three. A triple threat.
She's a triple threat.
All right. It's
and she's still here.
It's time for our weekly commentary. It's called Out on a Limb, and this is moi. I'm not opposed to the death penalty because innocent people might be executed, men like Todd Willingham in Texas, for whom posthumous evidence revealed that the Lone Star State mistakenly murdered a man who had always maintained his innocence. I may add that there's a movie that opened based on this case, opened at the IFC. I wish they had called me for a screening. I would have gone, but I'm going to see it on Monday. It's called, I can't remember what it's called, but it's a documentary on him. I'm not opposed to the death penalty because black men are disproportionately executed, often poor men who were not afforded professional legal representation and for whom evidence had been withheld. I'm not opposed to the death penalty because most civilized nations have banned them, leaving the United States in the company of North Korea, Syria, Iran, and China. Four of the few remaining countries which killed their own citizens. I'm not opposed to the death penalty because men like Troy Davis get caught in a judicial maze of indifference, inadequacy, and inaction. I'm against the death penalty because it's wrong for government to kill people to demonstrate that killing people is wrong. It's vengeance, not closure, and it corrupts the moral fiber of the nation that allows it to happen. There was nothing more insidious than the complicity of two states, Georgia and Texas, in an obvious attempt to defuse legitimate protests recently. As Georgia was executing Troy Davis, a black man, they were aware that many of the protests were centered on Davis's possible innocence, legal errors, and his color, all historically consistent with putting a black man to death in the state of Georgia. The state of Texas, which kills its citizens with numbing regularity, arranged to execute Lawrence Russell Brewer on the day after Troy Davis was murdered. He was not selected at random. Brewer was convicted of a hideous racist crime, dragging to his death James Byrd a decade ago, an act reminiscent of Klan terrorism in the past. There were few advocates for James Russell Brewer, but it was clearly an attempt to minimize allegations that the death penalty had anti-black implications as performed in the southern United States. I could hear them saying, look, we killed a white man, balancing the scale of the murder of Troy Davis. There are segments in our society which are vengeful. By having the death penalty, we nurture the sickest components in our society. Just recall recently Texas Governor Rick Perry winning applause during a Republican debate when he boasted that his state had killed more of its citizens than any of the other 49 states. They applauded. It was a shameful revelation of what is out there, a contradiction to the religious piety often expressed by these same people at their political gatherings. Martin Luther King once stated that if we continue with an eye for an eye, the result would be a nation of blind people. Around each execution, family members of the victims, the people who died, are interviewed and beatified, often heard calling for closure. State executions do not provide closure, only revenge. I've met with, worked with, and talked with members of families who have someone who had died, have been murdered, and they have shared with me that no closure was achieved. Their loved ones were still dead, and another family had joined them in mourning. In fact, some of the most courageous people I've worked with over the years are family members of slain Americans, some of whom have been motivated to work with the poor and the disenfranchised in an attempt to lessen the possibility of future violence. One woman said to me, and I paraphrase this because it was long ago, but her sentiments remain cemented in my brain. She said, "I don't want other families to have the pain that mine did. Working with kids is my way of remembering my dead brother. Killing his killer would not bring my brother back." The fact that the use of the death penalty has been racially biased, legally inept, politically exploited, and innocent people executed merely demonstrates that the champions of vengeance are also incompetent as well as immoral. My stand against the death penalty is because it is wrong. Do we know the difference between right and wrong? I'm David Rothenberg, out on a limb.
While I'm far away from you, my baby, I know it's hard for you, my baby, because it's hard for you, my baby, and the darkest hour is just before dawn.
Mamas and the Papas. That's the Mamas and the Papas. And that was a voice that was when I was protesting and marching. That was the sound that we heard, the mamas and the papas. Let me tell you about a couple of shows and another special thing that we're offering for you. Next Sunday, a week from Sunday, I only have to say this once, and only about a half a dozen or a dozen, about a dozen people respond, and it's the same people all the time because they say that these shows are so wonderful and so entertaining that as soon as I announce it, they call. The rest of you can just listen to their joy, but you may want. It's at Town Hall, has a series of landmark theater and concerts. And we have tickets for two of them. I'll tell you about the first one. It's next Sunday, the 16th at 3 o'clock. It's the seventh annual Broadway Cabaret Festival. And the one on the 16th, calling it Broadway Originals, features an afternoon of songs and memories with performers reprising songs they introduced either in the original Broadway production or the revival. Some of the people who are appearing are Yvonne Constant in La Plume de, from La Plume de Matin. I worked on that at La Plume de Constant. Gee, that's 1963 or 4. She's still around singing. She was a luscious blonde from France that was in that show. Daisy Egan from The Secret Garden. Bob Stillman from Grey Gardens. Christopher Fitzgerald from The Producers. Alexander Gemigiani from Les Mis. Marilyn Michaels, the very funny Marilyn Michaels from Catskills on Broadway. And the Manhattan Rhythm Kings, that delightful trio of singers and dancers from Crazy for You, with others to perform. And what it will be is an afternoon of Broadway troupers singing songs they introduced in the revival or the original production on Broadway. It's at Town Hall next Sunday at 3 o'clock, and it is, where is it? It's $65 for a pair of tickets. Town Hall's on West 43rd Street. If you want to go on the 16th, you call right now at 212-209-2950. If you want to make a gift of $250 during this fundraising drive, you will get $300 worth of theater going in the upcoming weeks. Here's another show coming back. It was a great Broadway hit about a decade ago called Say Goodnight, Gracie. The original had the late Frank Gorshin playing George Burns. A delightful evening. I remember, you don't laugh hysterically. You just have a smile on your face throughout. Joel Rooks, who was the understudy for Frank Gorshin and then took over after Frank passed away, has been touring in it, and it's coming back for a limited engagement in New York. Say Goodnight, Gracie is about George Burns and Gracie Allen, obviously. We have tickets Friday, all matinees, Friday, Saturday, and Sundays at 2 o'clock. This week, next week, and the week after, and forever after. You can see Say Goodnight, Gracie, the life, the laughter, and the love of George Burns and Gracie Allen. We're at 212-209-2950. Now, for those of you who don't hear my voice enough, we're making a series of CDs available. This package, it's really rather an extensive package. Interviews I've done, and these are lengthy interviews, with some of the most interesting people that and I found in the archives, and we've made this package. It's an interview I did with Mario Cuomo, the former governor of the United United States. We should have lived so long. Mm. Former governor of New York.
Heard that.
Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright Edward Albee. Henning Mankell, one of the most successful crime fiction writers in the world, the Swedish journalist, writer, and T.J. English, who wrote a fascinating book about crime in New York in the 60s. Those are four separate interviews in the package. There's also 15 different Out on a Limbs. I picked some of the best that we had on record of my views. And also a editorial I did on why and explaining why I appeared in the movie Outrage outing Ed Koch, and I explained my reasons. And also a rare CD, I found the original tape, and we had it made into a CD, of 1967, after a performance of Fortune in Men's Eyes, before the Fortune Society started. I was moderating a panel on stage with Perry Thomas, who had written the book Down These Mean Streets, and someone from the Department of Correction. And those dialogues led to the creation of Fortune Society. So all of these are one package for $100, and the money goes to BAI. Mm. It's interviews with Mario Cuomo, Edward Albee, Henning Mankell, T.J. English, 15 Out on a Limbs. You may be sick of my voice by the time you get to the whole packet. Why I Outed Ed Koch, and a fascinating after-performance discussion after a performance of Fortune in Men's Eyes that WBAI broadcast live back in 1967. So that's all of that for $100. So you can call us right now at 212-209-2950 if you want that package, if you want to see Say Goodnight Gracie, and what was the other show? How long ago that was. And the Broadway at Town Hall. I also might add that we have tickets for Memphis, the Tony Award-winning musical at the Schubert Theater. If you've never seen it, what a triumph, that joyous Broadway musical.
What a treat to bring somebody, too.
Yeah, all the ingredients that you want in a Broadway musical. So, 212-209-2950. If there's nothing in that package for you, I can't imagine. I want to go home and listen so I can call in and pledge. So, Angel, I found out you've been down on Wall Street, not here at the station, but you've been with the protesters.
Yes, I've been in Occupy Wall Street. I've been there every day. My cousin is down. The people have come down from, my house has now become the hotel.
One of the things I asked you is, do they need things? Do they need food? Do they need blankets? Do they need clothes?
They need bodies. They need people to come. They need your energy. They need your friends. They need your family. They need you. This is supposed to be the 99% revolution. People are angry and they ain't taking it no more.
It's very interesting that the press was. The Post editorial was just disgraceful, but I commented that the Times was downplaying it, and it took the arrest by the cops. The cops brought the media.
Actually, the Times did. The Times story, my wife read it. She said it was an excellent article. They were very fair and balanced, and they did a very well. She's actually,
The first week or two, the Times was buried on the inside. The cover, the writing was good, but the stories were downplayed, and it didn't become a front page story until the cops made their calculated.
And then
miscalculated.
One of my fellow students got arrested during that.
Is he okay?
Yeah, he's okay. It's his first time getting arrested. Which was funny because they start talking about that in a class, and it's, I'm sitting there and I'm laughing inside.
He's a student at John Jay?
Yes, he's in my public administration class.
So what do you do while you're there?
I talk to people. Actually, I brought my drum yesterday, so I was in the middle of the march. I'm in there.
Are they aware of the fact that before the rest of the world discovered it, that BAI was talking about it and giving them courage?
I don't even, there's a lot of young people, and there seems to be a divide. There is the anarchist movement, like everything. There is the anarchist part. There's the young people that don't want any leadership because they're tired of leaders. They say that leadership will emerge and this will, and that the 99% revolution is viral. In other words, it's everywhere. We don't need leadership. The people in the 1% will eventually understand that the people are extremely angry. They are so angry that they will burn the house down with themselves and everybody else in it if these people don't change their ways.
Is jobs a major
issue?
Just,
yes. You got the unions there, and it really is jobs. It's the jobs. It's the not lending money out. It's the no law and order at the top. You steal a loaf of bread, you get 99 years. Wall Street steals $1 million, they get a bonus, and they get our money from our pocket. People are tired of that.
Let me make a very pragmatic suggestion, and that is in terms of jobs. I've been complaining constantly about Duane Reade, about AMC movie theaters. I went into Staples, and I stood in the middle, and I yelled, "I'm a customer, I'm here." And the guy at the cash register said, "I wish more people would do that. They don't hire enough people, and they have big profits." If
David?
We targeted all those stores. If Home Depot and Staples and all the movie theaters and all the drugstores would all hire two or three people that to provide the consumer service. If Time Warner wouldn't put me on hold for 20 minutes, if JetBlue didn't say you have your call is important to us and then you have an 11-minute wait time, if they all hired people to go along with their bonuses and their profits and their distribution to their investors, they might find that they'd be more successful.
Well, you see, it's not the, you know, I don't think people are mad at the investors. People are mad at the idea that a CEO will get paid all this money. And where's that money coming
from?
It's coming from the workers.
Did you see what happened at Hewlett-Packard? The CEO was fired for incompetence.
And they gave him $13 million
bonus for his incompetence.
I'm like, in what world does that happen except in this one?
How many people could they hire for those $13 million?
You be incompetent and see if they don't fire you. You're lucky they give you if you can collect unemployment.
Well, and because of the budget cuts, the city, in today's paper it's announced, just fired 677 people who work in the city schools. That adds to unemployment.
And this, what the thing is, and people are just tired. And they're coming down here. But what makes this different than a lot of is that the young people are in it. I mean, remember I used to complain when I first got out. I was like, why is there no revolution? Why is the people not angry? I mean, this stuff. And now,
am I naive about identifying jobs that way, though?
Jobs is what else? But the thing is that when elephants fight, right? Because the big people up the top. When elephants fight, everybody, the ants get crushed.
When I went to the AMC on 42nd Street a few weeks ago, a big movie chain. There were 30 people in line. It always happens. There was one box office open. I said to the guy at the box office, where's the manager? I went to the manager and I said, why don't you have more people working here? And he said, well, the shift, the people called in sick. I said, that's nonsense. Every time I come here, it's the same story. Why don't you hire more people? And he said, well, the management can't afford it. And I said, listen, you have about 12 movies here. I've seen the ads on television and the newspapers. You must have spent hundreds of millions or hundreds of thousands of dollars at least on advertising to get us here. You can't pay $8.50 an hour for somebody else at the box office to take us when we finally get here? He said, well, we have the machines. I said, the machines are not people and they're not jobs. You can afford $8.50. And one of the guys, young guys who was working there came to me afterwards. He said, I wish we were getting $8.50 or $9 an hour. It's not happening.
They're not even getting that, huh? Well, the thing is, actually, I could sum up the message that they wanted to send to that 1%. And basically, it's, come on. Enough already. Do something. Open up the spigot. Lend money. Let the, invest in America. Start investing in people. Maximization of profit is not the, one thing I've learned in class, and it's probably real, capitalism works best when a society is most stable. And right now it's not stable and capitalism is not working.
But they're still giving the bonuses and they're not
because
listening.
Because there's no law and order.
No,
people steal and no one comes after them because they have too much money because there is money is speech and that is crazy.
Angel, it's I've got mine, screw you attitude. That's what it is. And they don't need one more yacht and one more jet plane and
they're
one more.
They're bored.
Remember that line Wall Street 2 when the
truly
guy said,
rich are bored.
That guy in Wall Street 2 said, what is your number? To this avaricious man, he said, what is your number? And he said, what do you mean my number? And he said, how much do you need before it's enough? And he said, my number is more. And we're fighting more while other people are having nothing.
And, but the thing is that we need your energy. People need to go down there. If you're tired of the way it is, and come down, say something, do something.
Are you going to be there today?
I'm going to be there every day until they throw us out of that park. And then I'm going to be there afterwards anyway. it's just, if you're tired of what's going on, if you think it's bad, left, right, it's not a lefty thing and it's not a righty thing. It's not against.
It's a job thing. It's a money thing.
We need to take back the government, plain and simple.
All right. That's Angel's report from Wall Street. We'll see you all there this today.
Bring your family, bring your kids, bring everybody.
And tell them
care.
To listen to BAI so that you know that that there are some media that is supportive of you while Fox is just,
they're controlled by the 1%.
John Stewart's so wonderful. He had shown all the people on Fox
right.
the dirty ragamuffin, blah, blah, blah. And then he had Sean Hannity saying, The people have marched to the street. This is what's needed. This is supportive. Da, 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 da. And then John Stewart says, oh, what's that? Oh, that's Hannity in 2009 talking about the tea baggers, the Tea Party people. He was applauding all of the things that the people in the park are doing now.
Well, believe it or not, the Tea Party is a symptom of that. They're being manipulated financed by somebody else, by the Koch brothers, but that's okay. But they are their anger is genuine, and it's really directed at that. They're just being misled.
The difference between the Tea Party and the people on Wall Street now, the Tea Party has been financed by corporate America.
True.
And they are,
but their anger is real.
Their anger is real because...
So their anger needs to be
their anger
joined
is be,
with this anger here.
No, no. Their anger is being financed. And they are sell it, and what they are being fed is fear. They're being feared of immigrants, of gay marriage, of abortion, of people who aren't Christian.
True.
That's they're being fed fear. The people on Wall Street are talking about needs of average citizens in a country that has ignored them.
I'm thinking that the people on Wall Street right now are occupying Wall Street. I'm thinking that they're talking fear too, but they're talking fear to that 1%. You know, you're not afraid of us. You have no respect for us. You have lost all sense of reality and proportion and, you know, all sense of responsibility. And if you're not going to be responsible, we're just going to change the show. We're going to change the channel and you're not going to be able to watch TV. And we're going to sit you in the corner until you...
And now BAI is going to talk about some of the shows for which we have tickets. And I'm going to, we're segueing into our...
Well, that's theater. The theater, the real theater, and now we're going to send you to some more theater.
The theater of the streets. We have tickets for The Devil's Music, The Life and Blues of Bessie Smith.
That's good.
A wonderful actress named Michelle Braden is playing Bessie Smith. If you're young and you don't know who she is, Bessie Smith was one of the most influential and popular blues singers. She was the queen of the blues, died sadly in an automobile accident in the 30s. But she has left an enormous legacy. And in this show, The Devil's Music, The Life and Blues of Bessie Smith, you have an opportunity to celebrate her. We have tickets for it Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday this week and next. $60 to BAI, and you get a pair of tickets. It's at the Theater at St. Luke's. And we're at 212-209-2950. We also have tickets for... What else do we have tickets for? Harry and Eddie, The Birth of Israel at the Actors Temple. Harry is Harry Truman. Eddie was his partner in a haberdasher store in Missouri back in the 20s and 30s. And this is about Eddie's influencing Harry Truman to acknowledge Israel as a country in the after World War II. Mm-hmm. We have tickets for that Wednesday matinee, Saturday night, and Sunday matinee this week and next. That's $60 for a pair of tickets. So let's review some of the shows that we have. 212-209-2950. We have tickets for Voca People, the enchanting musical of...
It's fabulous. Now I'm seeing the advertisements on TV.
Yeah, they're finally advertising on TV. But you know what? It's very funny. It hasn't had an enormous response from our listeners for whatever reason, even though people have told me that it's Blue Man Group with music. What I have noticed is that almost everybody who has gone to see it calls back for tickets again because they want to bring other people, which is the best testament that any show can get.
There it is. You know, basically... Can I go again?
That's always, everybody had a
it's always
great
a test of the ride is good.
We have Voca People for Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday matinee and evening, and Sunday matinee and evening. $60 for a pair of tickets. You couldn't do better. And talking about Blue Man, we have Blue Man Group Sunday, every Sunday in October at 5 o'clock or 8 o'clock, and that's also $65 for a pair of tickets. And, of course, Blue Man Group is entertainment, quintessential entertainment. If you want to make a gift of $250, you get $300 worth of theater going. Has anybody been calling in for the 250s?
Not that I know of.
What Mike?
Sure. Green.
I can't even tell which is green. Is that your mic, Victor?
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah. No, I'm not sure, Dave.
Victor is one of the people that answers the phone. I've asked him to come in because Victor is also in the cast of Castle 2. And now that you've had three performances, you are no longer a caseworker. You are also now an actor.
Yes.
Do you assume that responsibility?
Yes, indeed.
How does it feel being in front of an audience?
Well, it's mixed feelings being in front of an audience. You want to reach people, even if you don't know how far your message is going. It's a collaboration. I feel that I'm taking part of something that's like greater than me, and I don't know where it would end or where it, how far it would go. Actually, I'm thinking of all those who don't have a voice and all the similar stories of people who've been incarcerated and who have tried to turn their lives around or have made strive in becoming better people or actually just growing up. And I hope that my
after the play,
story does that.
It happened in Castle 1. It's happening in Castle 2. The cast is surrounded by people afterwards. Have people have any remarkable things been said to you? Do you feel that you've reached people that...
Yes. It seems like some of the older women who were like come to see the show, they wanted to speak to me after and say that they felt good about what I said and they're proud of me. And that they their heart was, you know, goes out to me. So I think I reached them because, speaking of being a young man and whether or not they are mothers or not, they can actually see where, my pain stems from relationship with my mom.
Yeah.
I think they sense that and they want to care and they let it be known.
One of the profound things that you talk about, which resonates with people, but they can't express in Castle 2 is you talk about loneliness. And that's an emotion that people have difficulty. Loneliness and resentment are things that people don't articulate. And for you to be in this play, The Castle 2, and share that is deeply profound. But I wanted to ask you, in The Castle 2 is four men who have done 60 years in prison between them, Victor being one of them, talking about coming to the castle, a place where his life went through was at a crossroads and shifted. Is that when we did the performance, we did it twice at the castle, and the audience comes in predisposed because they are supported, the BAI listeners and the supporters. But when we went to Baruch College, there's 125 youngsters who knew nothing about the Fortune Society or the castle. Most of them had never seen or met or heard anyone that had been in prison. And there was that young man in the audience who said that that's the path he had been on. But you all gave him it was a wake-up call.
It was actually reinforcement. Because he said he had just changed his life over and was doing better. But he said that what he had heard that evening would have definitely done it for him if he had not changed. But it was supportive of what he had done. And he knew that he had been doing the right thing by getting himself together.
He said, I couldn't do what you all have gone through. I couldn't go through what you have all gone through. That's an incredible feeling that you that being in a theater, that you can have that profound effect on a life. Angel, I'm sure you have many times. I remember kids coming to the theater when we did it off Broadway, surrounding you afterwards, whispering.